I know you're wanting to listen to this episode of the Comics Alternative, but before we get started, let me just remind you guys that it's the gift-giving season. Now, that may be obvious, but one of the things that's not so obvious is that you can get all of your stuff and help out the podcast by going to comicsalternative.com/Amazon. Click through on our Amazon banner that you find on that page, and whatever you get during that visit to Amazon, the Comics Alternative will get a few cents kickback. So, whether it be Hanukkah, Christmas, Kwanzaa, or Festivus, get your gifts through our Amazon associate link. It's a smart way to get your books, and you'll be helping out the podcast. And isn't that what the holiday season is all about? Helping our podcast. This is the Comics Alternative, the world's smartest comics podcast. Episode 300, a look at the December previews catalog. Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Comics Alternative. I'm Derek.
And I'm Sturge, and we're two guys with PhDs talking about comics.
And on this week's episode, Sturge and I are going to be looking at the December previews catalog. But before we get to that conversation, we want to let all of you know that this episode of the Comics Alternative is brought to you by those great folks at Discount Comic Book Service. Go to their website, dcbservice.com, for all of your comics pre-ordering needs. There, you're going to find all DC, Marvel, Image, and Dark Horse titles at 40% off of the cover price if you pre-order. For all of the other publishers, you'll find that those discounts are anywhere from 20 to 35% off of the cover price. And every single month, you're going to find some incredible specials. Sometimes those specials could be as much as 45% off the cover price. Sometimes 50% off cover, but often you can find discounts that are even more impressive than that.
That's right, Derek. Right now I'm looking at some of the specials they have coming on, and they have a 50% off bundle for DC's Jinx Worlds, now that Michael Bendis is over there with his imprint. And also there's a Vertigo bundle that's also 50% off, so both of those are great bargains.
That's right. You know, every single month, you really can't beat the prices, bundled or otherwise, at Discount Comic Book Service. Go to dcbservice.com because they will take care of all of your comics pre-ordering needs. And after you do get your titles there, please be sure to send them an email and tell them that the two guys with PhDs sent you.
With bells on, because it's seasonal.
That's right. Yeah. Well, this is, I guess you could say, a very special episode of the Comics Alternative, Sturge.
Uh-oh, we're gonna have a message at the end and a stunt cast guest star.
No, it is our 300th regular review episode. Yeah. Now we've done more than 300 episodes of the Comics Alternative, but. In fact, we've done about something like 785, something like that, if you include the interviews and various, on location and monthly shows that we do. But in terms of our weekly review shows that go up, for the most part, every single Wednesday, this is our 300th.
Wow. See, that's quite an accomplishment.
And it's taken us a little over 6 years to do that, because there have been a few weeks where, for various reasons, we haven't been able to put up a review show. But for the most part, you know, since we started in August of 2012, we've put up about every Wednesday a regular review show. This is our 300th.
Well, take a bow, because that's nothing to sneeze at.
Yeah. It does feel like quite a bit of an accomplishment.
It does. For me, it only feels like about 5 or 6 episodes. For you.
Yeah. Well, like I said, we've done many more than that. We've probably done, I think, looking at our Libsyn account, 784 total episodes. Wow. Of the Comics Alternative. And that includes the monthly, the interviews, and things like that. So,
hey, that's quite a lot of podcasting. I'm glad I've been along the way because I have a lot of catching up to do.
Well, I'm glad you were here for the 300th episode and can help celebrate.
Woohoo! That's right. See, I have bad jokes and I don't know, a special guest star just waiting in the wings. I might not actually have a special guest star waiting. Gordon Jump. How about that?
That's right. And we have as our guest, funny man Charlie Callis, who's, I'm sure, dead. But I just like to say funny man Charlie Callis.
Say it makes it would make it that much more impressive. We can have a podcast and a seance at the same time.
Yeah, there you go. Well, let's go ahead and jump into this month's previews catalog. Now, unfortunately, because of things that were going on, at least with me, in November, we weren't able to look at the November previews catalog. And I'm sorry about that. I always hate to miss an episode, especially a previews one, because we have a good time kind of going through this almost wish list of highlighting upcoming comics that we're interested in, whether we get them or not. But we're here with December, so we're looking at the December previews catalog, and these, for the most part, are releases that will be coming out in February, at least with single issues. With graphic novels, sometime it's later. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, these are releases that will be out in February or later, but they're being solicited now in the December previews catalog. And the first section is, I guess, as it has been for the past several months, Image. So where do you start in Image?
Page 40.
Okay. I start a little bit before that. One of the things that struck me about the Image offerings this month is, you know, you can almost always count on Image to offer, five or more number one issues of new series every single month. But I guess this is because of it being toward the beginning of the year. They're kind of pulling back a little bit.
Right.
And there are only two number one issues of series that are solicited. And then everything else is either, you know, single issues other than number ones or trades. And there are a lot of trades this month.
That's true.
The one number one issue that I wanted to point out is on page 34, and this is Sharky the Bounty Hunter.
Oh, yeah.
This is number one of six, and this is written by Mark Miller with art by Simone Bianchi. Or is it Bianchi or Bianchi?
I'm going to go Bianchi.
Okay, so let's go Bianchi. It looks interesting. You know, with Mark Miller, I could go with him or not. It all depends. I mean, I feel kind of not really ambivalent, but I mean, there are things of his that I've read that I really liked, other things that are so-so.
Right.
This seems interesting. The solicit reads, set in a brilliant new sci-fi universe, Sharky is a blue-collar bounty hunter who tracks criminals across the galaxy in his converted rocket-powered ice cream truck. Now, that's what got me.
Okay. Rocket powered ice cream truck.
Yeah. Aided and abetted by his 10-year-old partner. That also got my attention. He's out for the biggest bounty of his career. It looks interesting. In Bianchi's art, we have about, what, two, three pages of that sample art. Did get my attention as well.
Yeah, I definitely saw it. Saw it as I was scrolling through too. And yeah, Bianchi is definitely gorgeous. The artwork's always gorgeous for me. And it pulled my eye, but I kind of have the same thought as you, Millar. I never know how to say it. Let's say Miller.
Yeah, I've heard people say Millar, but I think maybe even him say that because I think he's Scottish,
right?
But it's pronounced Miller.
All right, well, go Miller. See, I lived up in Boston for a while, so I want to be like Millar. but Miller, I don't know. His works are, like you said, some of them I really gravitate towards and some of them just leave me kind of like very cold. Mm-hmm. And so I never know. And I know he signed that huge media deal, I think with Netflix to kind of produce things. And there's a part of me that thinks, I don't know, sometimes he hits with something great And sometimes it just seems like it's a story and it's fine, but it's not like enthralling for me.
So just, like my feeling, right? You know, sometimes hot, sometimes cold.
That's exactly right. Although lately I feel just more like lukewarm. Like I just like, oh, there it is. And I don't look at it. And maybe I'll look at it later and I'll think, oh, I should have paid attention. Then I'll kick myself. But right now I'm going to let it go by.
Okay. So you say your first stop in the catalog is page 40.
That's right.
Okay.
And this is a trade paperback. Like you said, I noticed this time around, there wasn't a lot of number ones and I'd noticed this series before, but I'm glad that the first trade is coming out. It's called Bully Wars and it's written by Scotty Young and with art by Aaron Conley. And it's an all ages book, which all ages books, there's not too many of those that come out from Image, but the premise of it just kind of cracks me up because it's called Bully Wars and it's basically Bully Wars. Well, the thing says Rufus has been the biggest bully in Rottenville since kindergarten, but everything changed on the first day of high school. Suddenly going from bully to bullied, he's forced to make a shaky pact with his favorite geek, Spencer, and his twin siblings, besties, Edith and Ernie, to survive the Hunger Games-like contest known as the Bully Wars, where the winner will rule the school. So it just sounds insane to me.
Yeah.
And so, and I like Scotty Young, some of his other series. He wrote I Hate Fairyland, and I really like that. I wish he was drawing this too, but it looks, from the art I've seen in it, it looks similarly cartoony and fun. So I don't know. That just, it stood out to me as something I'd give a shot to. That's five issues. So there's tentacles. There's all kinds of things coming out of the lockers on the cover. And to me, it doesn't look like whatever the bullies are. They're not typical. They look like supernatural. I don't know. Look like maybe there's slime monsters and octopi and all kinds of crazy things in this school.
Yeah. I had wondered about that. You know, I like Scotty Young's art. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I appreciate it as much as I used to, and I don't know why that is. It could be that he is that I kind of fell not out of favor with Scotty Young's work, mm-hmm. But at least didn't pay as much attention to it when he started to do writing for Marvel. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know. I'm not really sure why I'm not as enthusiastic about mm-hmm. his stuff, because I really enjoyed what he did years ago with the various, you know, Wizard of Oz adaptations.
Yeah, those were good.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, Bully Wars is something definitely worth checking out.
Cool. Where do you head after that?
I'm on page 44. Do you have anything before there?
I do not. Okay. I don't have anything until 58.
Okay. So, you know, the thing, as I mentioned in this month's previews with the Image section, is we really don't have many new series in terms of number one single issues, but there are tons of trade paperbacks of series mm-hmm. that they've been having going on for a long time. Like, for instance, Dead Rabbit, Cold Spots, Burnouts, in addition to what you had mentioned, Bully Wars, and there are a lot of others as well. Mm-hmm. You know, these may be interesting, but one that I did want to point out on page 44 is Christopher Sabella in Ibrahim Mustafa's High Crimes.
Mm-hmm.
And I mentioned this because I think I read the first two issues, maybe two or three issues of High Crimes when it was a digital comic, because this started mm-hmm. as a digital comic.
Okay.
Not as a web comic, but as a digital comic. And then I thought that Image had already collected High Crimes, but maybe I'm wrong. Mm-hmm. This may be, I guess, the first trade collection of High Crimes. I really enjoyed it. I mean, I particularly like crime and mystery narratives. Mm-hmm. But this is one that it has been a long time, but I remember reading the first two or three digital issues of this. I really liked. And I like Christopher Sabella's other work, especially when it deals with crime. So yeah, I think that this would be worth checking out.
It's definitely the cool in terms of the setting. Mm-hmm. And I didn't mean that as a bad joke, but it's unique.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, the only other, I guess trade paperback. Well, actually there's another one that I want to highlight, but one that I mm-hmm. didn't note that I think would be interesting, and this is on page 46, is Leviathan, Volume mm-hmm. 1 by John Lehman and Nick Patara and Michael mm-hmm. Garland. I've read the first issue of Leviathan. In fact, I think I talked about it on an On Location episode earlier this year. Mm-hmm. And it's an interesting story. So I would be definitely interested in checking out the first trade.
Yeah, and I love both of those creators because, well, Chu is one of my favorites. And I really like Manhattan Projects. At least maybe the first five of the six trades were really good. Actually, the last one was good, too. It just seemed a little bit more slight. But this looks like it just looks insane, like in terms of the artwork.
Yeah, like, it is. Patera does a really good job. And you say you go next to where?
58, which isn't a number one, but it's criminal number two. But we didn't talk about number one. And I'm just thankful that there's a new criminal series. I think I said that in the Thanksgiving episode, but I just wanted to highlight that criminal's back out there. And I'm excited that it's there.
I had noted that too. Now, we usually don't mention like number two, three, four, so on and so forth issues of series, let's say after the number one. But you're right. Since we didn't do a November preview show, I did want to mention that. So I'd noted that as well. I'm really glad that criminal is back as in single issues.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and one of the things that they know is that it has back page art and articles only found in the issues, so it won't be in the trades. So, you know, it's worth your while to pick this up.
Yeah,
in floppy.
You know, and I appreciate that. I really like it when creators give you a reason to get the single issues and not necessarily wait for the trade. So they include things in single issues that aren't available to trade, or vice versa. There are things in the trade that aren't available in the single issues. And I think that that's smart as well in terms of sales. And, you know, another creator who does this quite often is Matt Kent. I mean, you can like get his various collections, which are usually hardback. I mean, not get the single issues and just wait to the collections. The thing is, you miss out on some of the things that he puts in the single issues, which is great. So, for instance, in terms of mind management, I know with those issues, at least at first, I don't know how long he did this for, the back covers were parts of a larger image. And so if you laid the back covers down or laid the issues down with the back covers facing up on the floor and put them all together, they created an image that was really interesting. But that's something you couldn't get in the mind management collections.
That's fascinating. I did not know that. See, I only ever read the collections of that. So shame on me. I need to go find me some floppies of that.
Yeah. That's why when it comes to Matt Kent's work, for the most part, I will, especially things that he does with, let's say, I guess, Dark Horse or now Boom, because he has the Black Badge series.
Right.
You know, I'll get the single issues because I do think that there's some value in those, that something that he puts in there or something about those single issues that you won't find in collections.
Say more bang for your buck. And I think you're right. It just makes smart. It's nice in terms of design sense and like rewarding as a fan, you know, when you read something and you figure it out and you feel clever and, you know, you see that. But, you know, I think it also more bang for their buck. So they can sell you a trade and a flop.
Yes.
See, that's it. The special appearance by the cash register.
There's only one other thing that I have in image this month. I don't know about you.
Go ahead.
But actually, this comes before page 58 with the solicit for criminal number two. And I guess this is more of an observation than anything. This is on page 52, Stray Bullets, Sunshine and Roses, volume 4. And one of the things that Lapham has been doing over the past several months is putting out these collections of Sunshine and Roses. I mean, I'm amazed that Sunshine and Roses has been going on for as long as it has. And I can't remember what issue they're up to now. I mean, I'm a Lapham fan, especially when it comes to Stray Bullets. And I think I got the very first issue of Stray Bullets, Sunshine and Roses. But after that, I kind of held off and I said, I'll just wait for the trade, thinking that Sunshine and Roses was a narrative arc that would last for maybe one trade, maybe two at tops. But man, that thing's been going on forever. I can't remember how many years. And so I have been getting these collections, not that I've had time to read them, but now, are you a fan of Stray Bullets?
I am. I actually buy this in floppy, so I'm with you. I buy this. I still have them, and I read them in chunks. So it's like a fake trade. I get the trade sensation without the thing. But yeah, I'm a big fan of his stuff. I mean, I remember, I don't remember when exactly it was, but I remember reading, I think it was the first from the very first series. And it just like, I had no idea who this was. I just knew people liked it. And I was like, okay, I'll give it a go. And it, like you said, like you like a good crime story. Mm-hmm. And his stuff is like gritty and it's got that the crime story characteristics, but it's also got a lot of insane features that kind of really make them interesting and unique, I think. It's something I'm also surprised that it's out there as long as it is, because in the past, you know, the storyline would last maybe 15 issues and then it was over. And I want to say it's 40 at this point. It's a high number.
Yeah, it's like over 35, 38.
Right. I think it's in the 40s at this point is what I want to say. But and I like them. And that's, and I'm glad in a way, because I'm like, good on him. You know, David Latham, I want him to have, you know, sometimes creators don't get to put out a lot of things, or he must have a lot of fans that just, it's just not, they're not vocal or above, you know, very visible, but they're not just publishing it to publish it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Do you have anything else in Image?
I do not.
Okay. So you're like me. You don't have as much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was surprised by where I gravitated this time around. Cause usually I'm with you. Like there's a lot of Image books. There's only one Dark Horse book for me. And then there's a lot of IDW books, which I like IDW, but I'm not usually a fan of all their offerings, but this seems like there's just like a whole slew of things coming out at this time of year.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm with you in terms of not as much in Image and then Dark Horse, but a lot more in IDW.
Mm-hmm.
So we move on to the Dark Horse section. And one of the things I wanted to mention before I get to a particular solicit is that March 23rd, apparently, is Hellboy Day.
Oh, yeah.
So Hellboy Day. Is this the first year that they've done this, or have there been Hellboy Days in the past?
I think it's the first because it's the 25th anniversary of Hellboy.
That's what I thought.
So I think and Hellboy is one of those things that's unique. I mean, that's part of, I think, why I didn't have so much in Dark Horse, is because there's a lot of prominent Hellboy material here in this issue of previews. And I think it's rightly so. I mean, Hellboy is one of the few creator-owned things that, you know, most, in my mind anyway, most people know about because of the major motion pictures. And, and it's just been a consistently kind of excellent series. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not something I'm going to say I follow regularly, but I think Comixology had they basically put everything up like over the last year because I think the anniversary coming. So I've gone back and reread all of Hellboy and a lot of BPRD, and those series are both just consistently excellent and, you know, great art, great stories. And, you know, it's like a high watermark for this company. And I think for comics in general. So to me, I'm really glad that, I mean, it's kind of also, I feel old because I remember when this came out and I feel like, oh yeah, Hellboy is a fun novel thing, but Hellboy's 25.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. I I'm with you. I'm a big fan of Hellboy, although I have to say that several years ago, it just seemed that the Hellboy universe, including the BPRD stuff and all of that, was just becoming so voluminous to the point that I felt overwhelmed. And so I pulled back. Thinking, well, eventually I'll get to Hellboy. And, you know, I do have the library editions that I've been getting instead of single issues. I quit getting single issues, you know, a number of years ago. But I am behind on my Hellboy, but I do love it. And I think that this is a good thing for Dark Horse because, you know, over the past few months, I've wondered about what's going on. I mean, a lot of their, let's say, licensed property, they're losing. Right. You know, they had been doing Buffy the Vampire Slayer. They had been doing Firefly. You know, but now I think Boom has those, right?
I think you're right.
And so they've lost some of the titles or at least the franchises that was probably, you know, making them some bucks. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I hope they're okay, but they still have the Hellboy. And also, you know, the Goon, right? They don't do the Goon anymore.
No.
And if the Goon does come back, then, you know, Powell's going to put it out, I'm sure, on his Albatross Funny Bone.
Right.
Funny book label. But they have Hellboy, and now they have Burger Books, which leads me to my next question. Where do you go? What do you have in that, Dark Horse?
That's a loaded question, because that's actually the one title I have is the Girl in the Bay on page 98. That's the one I have highlighted, and it's from Burger Books, not to lead us into things. But it just seemed like a really interesting – I mean, I'll read – it's J.M. DeMatteis.
Yeah, I say DeMatteis, but could be DeMatteis.
I've heard both ways, so call us JM and tell us how to say your name. DeMatteis, the art's by Corin Howell. And the premise is, in 1969, this 17-year-old Kathy Sartori was brutally attacked, her body hurled into Brooklyn's Sheep's Head Bay. Miraculously, she survives and fights her way back to the surface, only to discover that 50 years have passed and an eerie doppelganger has lived out an entire life in her place. And I won't keep reading, but that to me is like, sign me up. It's like a strange, supernatural. And I know from his writing. I mean, he's one of those writers that I generally like. Sometimes he gets a little bit maybe too spiritual for me. But for the most part, I really like his writing, and crime type stuff, I think he is a little bit more, this seems a little bit more grim, and I tend to think he writes better that way. Mm-hmm. Like I'm thinking about, I think he did Dr. Fate way back in the day, and that was all about like demons and, you know, Lords of Chaos. And I thought he did a very good job with this, and this just seems grim and, you know, I don't know what that thing is, but the doppelganger can't be good in my mind.
Right. Yeah. And he did, what was that book? Moonshadow?
Moonshadow. Yes.
Oh, that is such a wonderful text.
Yes. And he also did Greenberg the Vampire. And I love that too.
Yeah. I mean, I really do like his work. And specifically, I like his, let's say, non-mainstream stuff.
Right.
Or at least non-superhero stuff. And so this is all the more reason to check out The Girl in the Bay number one.
Yeah, and it's just a 4-issue limited series, but I mean, I think that's probably a good thing too, because it hopefully is a taut little, nice, grim, weird package.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Did you say that's the only thing you had in Dark Horse?
That is the only thing I have in Dark Horse.
Okay, I've got just one more thing in Dark Horse, and this is on page 108. And for listeners of the podcast, especially our preview shows, this should come as no surprise. This is the latest in Dark Horse's EC Archive series. You know, every time have a new volume that hasn't been published previously in the EC Archives, you know, I like to announce this. And this is EC Archives Two-Fisted Tales, Volume 4.
Mm-hmm.
Hard to believe that they're up to Volume 4. But, yeah, this is something – and I've been getting all of these – volumes of the EC Archives, or at least the latest incarnation of EC Archives, because they've done this in the past. But basically, it started with, a number of years ago, Gemstone started the EC Archives again, and they did a number of volumes. Then it was passed on to GC Press, I believe, and they did two volumes of the EC Archives. And then after that, Dark Horse got a hold of it. And I think that was maybe in 2013, I could be off there, but they've been doing them ever since, you know, slowly but surely. So I'm glad that they're continuing to do this.
Yeah, no, I love those books, and I'm with you. Although I fell off, I remember when Gemstones started, and I think I started buying those, and then just somewhere along the way, I lost my EC archive mojo. not because the comics aren't great. It's just, I think it was just opportunity and finance.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Because, you know, they can get a little pricey, because mm-hmm. this is going for retail for $49.99, but you can get it cheaper, I'm sure, significantly less expensive at, oh, no, no, no. Yeah. $49.99 at the mm-hmm. website of our sponsor, Discount Comic Book Service.
That's right.
Yeah. So,
and it's full color, which is nice, because I know, you know, some of the archives in the past were not color, and mm-hmm. that's nice in this kind of iteration. I mean, I remember there were a whole lot of different ones, I think, before people got organized, and there were black and white ones, and some were more, you know, not so high definition, for lack of a better word, like, mm-hmm. you know, the artwork was reproduced in really kind of not good ways in the past. And this is, I've flipped through these. These are gorgeous.
They are. And they're in color, as you mentioned. And also, they're the issues as they appeared. Now, and I guess it's kind of a double dip in a way. I've also been getting all of Fantagraphics EC mm-hmm. volumes, yeah. but those are arranged by creator.
Mm-hmm. Theme, right?
Or, yeah, I guess theme to a point, but I think it's primarily creator. But those are in black and white. Mm-hmm. So it's not in color. And you don't have the issues as they came out, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so you have two different kind of presentations with now Dark Horse and then Fantagraphics and what they're doing. And whether I should or not, I've been getting all the volumes of both.
Hey, there's no shame in getting EC. Mm. Yeah, and I'm just curious about this, because I always see these and I'm always curious. But on the same page, they're also doing an Eerie Archives. Mm-hmm. And those are way up high. I think they're up to 20. Well, it is. They're up to 26. Mm-hmm. I always am attracted to those, but I never want to get them. Like, I love the artwork in them. The stories aren't always great, but I love the artwork.
Yeah, I don't have any of the EC arc or the Eerie Archives. But like you, I find them attractive and intriguing. The mm-hmm. only archives from Eerie that I have are, I guess, creator-centric ones. Mm-hmm. So I have the one on Bernie Wrightson.
Right.
And I think there's one on Steve Ditko. And there's another one that I have. Corbin. Yeah, I've got that.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely have the Corbin.
Gotcha. Yeah, yeah. The art on those are always all-star team. Like, I just look at it, I'm like, oh, I just want mm-hmm. – I need unlimited funds so I can buy all the archives and make Dark Horse rich.
Well, if you don't have anything else in Dark Horse, mm-hmm. let's move to the next section, which in the main catalog, there's like a brief insert of DC.
Right.
Just brief, because they have their own catalog.
Mm-hmm.
In looking through the DC Comics Previews catalog, you know, I only have two things. They're just not that much. I mean, there's a lot of good stuff there, but it's for the most part series, let's say from Vertigo or Jinx right. World, that's already ongoing, right? So no mm-hmm. new number ones, or let's say the Sandman universe, that really stand out to me. And of course, right. you know, the new things are superhero stuff, which we really don't cover. But there are a couple of titles that I wanted to mention.
Sure.
Do you have anything in the DC catalog?
I did. I have five things, but
okay.
three of them are kind of superhero-y.
Well, go ahead and mention it. Where do you start?
I mean, I start on page two, just because there's a – I like Aquaman. I'm just going to tell you that. I like Aquaman. okay. Even old Super Friends Aquaman. but one of their initiatives is that they're taking YA authors and making specific series. And one of the first ones is Mera. It's a book about Mera, and it's called Tidebreaker.
Is that the youth series?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And there's a whole lot of those, and I'm just intrigued by what those are going to be like. So I'm I teach middle school teachers, so I'll buy this and see what it's like, just because I'm intrigued. And I haven't seen a lot of the interior art but it looks attractive, you know, and it's a setup. It sounds like, you know, Aquaman is going to be in this book, although he's mentioned in the text and not really in the imagery. To me, it's just, it sounds like classic Aquaman stories just cast in a different way because, mm-hmm. you know, she's sent to our world and, you know, you don't know if she's good or bad, but, you know, she ends up good. That's a spoiler for the most part, but I'm just kind of intrigued by what these will be. I just think it's interesting too, because it just cracks me up in a way about how they're marketed, just because the author's names are, you know, big font plastered at the top and the artist's names are much smaller at the bottom. So not as prominent, but it's a comic. So usually we see the other way around. Usually it's like the artist and then, you know, written by this person. But in this, it's I don't know. I'm intrigued by it, and I'll give it a go and see what it's like.
Yeah. What about the other young readers texts? Because, I mean, this is a new initiative for DC. And, I mean, they've been doing over the past few months, or at least announcing a variety of different things. Because there's the Black Label?
Right.
That's supposed to be edgier stuff, right?
And edgy, I think, yeah.
Yeah, and that's where we first got
the Batwang.
Yeah, the Batwang. you know, on the opposite end of the spectrum from the Black Label is the DC Comics for Young Readers.
Yeah, right. So they're trying to get everybody at some point. Mm-hmm. And they've had a few other initiatives, I think, with they're trying to. I've seen it when I go to the store. I mean, there's like high school superhero types. I forget what it is, but it's like Batgirl and Poison Ivy and Harley. But they're all like in high school together. And they all wear costumes to school because that makes sense. But but they're selling the toys and they're selling the costumes. I know that. So, you know, and it's to me like another, I don't know, like the superhero version. But I don't know if you remember, it's been a while now, but I think they had a Jinx line that was graphic novels aimed particularly towards girls. And they had some good creators.
Oh, yeah, like, yeah.
Rug and Cecil, whose name I'm going to butcher.
Sunny Lou?
Yeah, they had Sunny Lou too. I mean, they are a lot of good people.
And Ed Wood,
they didn't let it go long. Right. And they didn't let it go very long, it seemed to me. Like, they tried a book or two, and then they were like, okay, this isn't working. But
well, it was more than two or three. In fact, I've got stored somewhere. I don't know where they are. My daughter used to have them, but I think I got them back. Quite a number of them. And I read most, and I really enjoyed them. Even though they were geared toward, I guess, younger female readers, I think it could be appreciated by, you know, older male readers as well, because I enjoyed them. I don't know why they stopped it. I guess it's economic. It just didn't catch on as they thought. That's my assumption.
Yeah. And when I mean one or two, like you're right. There were multiple series, but, you know, I think that they wanted them to catch on, but I don't think any of them made it past two books.
Yeah.
Like, I think that the Plain Janes did, and there were a couple that did, but for the most part, it was like a single book here and a single book here. And with the, you know, I think the hope was that they would make series out of them.
Yeah. But
anyway. That was then.
Now I don't I don't have anything until page 62. Do you have something before that in the DC catalog?
I have two things. I think I have on page 6. I know it's superheroes, but it's the Female Furies, and I don't know if you read the recent Miracle Man series, which is technically superheroes, but it was very weird superheroes.
It's on my reading list or my wish list to get to, which I hope to before the end of the year.
Yeah, see, that's a plug, because maybe we'll talk about books that we liked at the end of the year.
You think we will?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. But I've read the 10 issues of it, I think. I haven't read the last two, but this is something that follows from that. But I don't know if it's linked to it, but it's the Female Furies, which are, I don't know if you remember who they are, but it's Big Barda and Stompa and Lashina and Orally and Granny Goodness. I mean, a whole bunch of mean, tough ladies. So I don't know. I'm intrigued by it. I just want to see, mostly because it's written by Cecil Castellucci, and I've really liked her stuff. She did the Shade the Changing Girl series for was it Young Animal?
Yeah.
That, and I really liked I like her writing in general. So I'm on for that, really. That's why I'm signed up. There's also on page 9, there's Wonder Twins, which, you know, harkening back to Super Friends, is something I would look at. But it's written by Mark Russell, who's the guy who's done he did the Flintstones and he did the Snagglepuss series. Mm-hmm. And I didn't like the Snagglepuss series quite so much, but I really liked the Flintstones. So this seems more like, you know, a book where they come to Metropolis to hang out with Superman ostensibly, but he's busy. So they're basically stuck in high school together and they wear purple shirts and have weird ears. And I think they get picked on. So I'll check this out because it sounds, I mean, it's a limited series, but it sounds like it's quirky enough for me to give it a go. Cause I've liked, I don't know. He does some things with licensed properties that I don't expect. Mm-hmm. Mark Russell. So I figured I'd give it a shot and see.
Okay.
And then what page were you on?
62.
All right, let's go there.
Yeah, and I'm not going to get this, but I just wanted to make an observation. This is Absolute Day Tripper by Gabriel Ba and Fabio Moon. Mm-hmm. And the reason I mention this is, well, one, Day Tripper, I think, is a fabulous story.
Okay. Right.
Fabulous Fabio and Gabriel. I really enjoyed it, and I read it. I think I have single issues, and I started reading it that way, but I think I finished it in trade. Mm-hmm. Now, this is a resolicit, so I don't know if the original solicit was canceled, now they're resoliciting it. But I wanted to point this out. The trade is fine for me, right? I was wondering, how many versions of Day Tripper are there? I know there's a deluxe Day Tripper, and right. I don't know how much extra in the deluxe edition you have from the trade. Maybe, you know, art, sketches, I don't know, that's not included in the book. But now we have an Absolute, which, you know, is fine, but I'm asking the question, I wanted to ask you this. You're familiar with Day Tripper, right?
Right.
Do you think Day Tripper deserves an Absolute? Is this Absolute worthy, so to speak?
I'm not sure, but I will say this. This was the book that our university picks a book for the freshmen to read, mm-hmm. and this was the common book about 4 or 5 years ago.
Day Tripper.
Day Tripper, yeah. The university picked Day Tripper for everyone in the university to read, and then they paid to Skype, I think, Ba and Moon to, like, talk to the freshmen about it, which I did not attend that, but I ran a discussion group about the book. I didn't run – I usually run a discussion group. This is the irony of the world, is that I did this thing for 12 years, run a discussion group. And then the 1 year they picked a graphic novel, I had a conference and couldn't meet.
Oh, geez.
But I did the university made a little YouTube video about how to read comics. And, you know, it went through like the first 5 pages of the book, just to kind of familiarize people that didn't know how to read comics about, you know, how the panels and everything work. I talked through that, though. That was my contribution instead of doing a discussion group. But to answer your question, though, I mean, I don't know if there's that many versions necessary in the world. I mean, it's gorgeous. I love the artwork in it, and I do love the story. And it's very it's novel and striking and weird. And it's kind of got all these magical, realistic features that make it fun to read and reread. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I don't know. I think this book has a lot of legs that I did not expect it to have. Because, you know, there's a lot of Vertigo series.
Right.
Just this one, I don't know what it is. Maybe it's not a U.S. market. Maybe it's some kind of international market, too, that it's just latched onto. Because, like you, I wonder if there's enough stuff to merit such an edition. But it's definitely gorgeous. And I think they're getting more attention now, too, with that. What's that one? How to Talk to Girl at Parties. How to Talk to Girls at Parties.
Oh, I think with Gaiman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a movie. It's going to be a movie.
Yeah. I read that. It's okay.
Exactly. I mean, it's pretty. It's like the artwork is great, but it's a short story. And he's got a lot of books like that where it's just like, oh, here's a short story. And, you know, it doesn't carry a lot of weight, but narratively speaking. But Everyone who, I mean, he knows a lot of people, or a lot of people who draw incredibly want to collaborate with him.
Yeah. And it's a good story. Just, I'm wondering, does it deserve all the attention and these various editions, these different editions that it's getting? And perhaps so. You're right. I think Vertigo does, or has done over the past several years, a lot of series that I think are just as good, at least, as Day Tripper. The difference, it seems to me, is that Day Tripper was relatively limited. I can't remember how many issues it was. What, 5 or 6?
It says 10.
Oh, 10 issues? Okay, wow.
But I thought it was 8. In my head, it was about 8.
Okay. But it's containable, which is different from a lot of the series that they do, right? I guess your school wouldn't have, as kind of an all-college read, something like Fables, right? Because that went on forever. That's one of my favorite Vertigo titles, hands down over Vertigo's history. But the thing about Day Tripper, it is containable in one volume, whether it be a trade or a deluxe or now an absolute edition.
Mm-hmm. And I think, well, this is just to say here at UT that a bunch of the people in the upper administration, I think they have ties to Brazil, or they do research on Brazil. So I think that may have had something to do with it as well, because it just definitely has that Brazilian angle as well. And, they're always looking for international or some version of, some thematic thing for the freshmen to kind of tie together a bunch of different activities and, I don't know, discussion groups and things like that. And I think for that, that's part of why, because it struck me as strange. I was like, out of all the graphic novels and all the comics you could pick, you pick that one, which is not a bad one, but not one of like a prominent one,
Right.
I'll give them credit for not just going like, oh yeah, Mouse or Persepolis or something like that.
Yeah.
But
it is different. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Where do you go next in the DC catalog?
I go to page 75, I think.
Okay.
4. Oh, 74.
That's the next place I go as well.
Well, then you talk about it.
Well, okay. Well, this is Promethea, the 20th anniversary deluxe edition, book one. And of course, this is, an incredible, a fabulous series written by Alan Moore with art by J.H. Williams III and others. Mm-hmm. I read Promethea. I didn't read it in single issues, but I read Promethea all the way through in trade. And then I think I ended up getting, because I loved it so much, the Promethea Absolute editions, except for the last one. I didn't get the very last one. That's kind of a hole in my collection. So I probably won't get the 20th anniversary deluxe edition, but it would definitely be worth it.
Isn't the last I bought Promethea as I bought it in floppies. This is when the 20th anniversary deluxe edition
hardcover. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And 20 years ago is when it was one of those nadirs in my comic book reading. And I remember this very well because I only think I read something like maybe 5 comic book titles at the time. And this was one of them. And the other ones were most of the other America's Best Comics that Alan Moore was doing at the time. Because I was kind of disenchanted with the general offerings by Marvel and DC at the time. And I love this series. It's beautifully drawn. It's beautifully written. I'm glad to see this, too. I have the floppies. I'd be very interested in buying this, even though it's pricey, but just because it'd be big and nice. Mm-hmm. If I remember right, though, the very last issue of the series, and this is getting the cart before the horse because this is only book one and we have a long way to go before the last book comes out. The last book in the series, I think, was splash pages, but in a way that if you cut them all out, it made a giant image. That's in my mind. Like, it was a poster, basically, that was in page form. And I don't know if I'm remembering that right or if I'm nuts, but that's my recollection. Is that the last issue was like this really weird, interesting, you should fold it out and read it
thing. Yeah, yeah. Was it the last issue?
I think it was.
Okay. It's been a long time. I think I have that issue just because of that experience of folding it out.
Mm-hmm. And that's, to me, I'd be intrigued to see how they handle that when the time comes. But this is phenomenal. Yeah, I agree with you. It's It's gorgeous. I was also a little bit, I don't know if I'm shocked or surprised, but they actually have his name. On other things, he's just the writer, or he was the writer, instead of, you know, allowing them to put his name on it. But his name is on this.
Yeah, because some things that he has come out with, I think that they did this with the Miracle Man when Marvel mm-hmm. was putting that out. The writer was listed as, what, the artist or the writer or something.
The writer. I think he was just the writer.
Yeah, which, I don't know, it's kind of goofy, but. And that's all I have in the DC catalog. Do you have anything else?
That is it for me as well.
Okay. Well, if we're finished with DC, let's move to the next publisher in the catalog, which is IDW.
Sure.
And you mentioned that you have more in IDW than you've had in the earlier publishers, and I'm the same way. Mm-hmm. There are quite a number of things in IDW that I want to mention, or at mm-hmm. least that I noted. Where do you start?
I start on page 142.
Okay, I've got one thing before that.
All right, let's hear it.
And that is one of my favorite series that now IDW puts out is Atomic Robo.
Oh, yeah.
And I have a special love for Atomic Robo because when my son, Zachary, our oldest child, was little, mm-hmm. I gave him and would get for him issues of Atomic Robo to read. And the great thing about Atomic Robo is that it's all age. Mm-hmm. And so they're definitely stories that I think adults could really get into. I do, at least. Mm-hmm. And I really do love not only Clevenger's writing, but also Wegner's art. Mm-hmm. And in fact, we had Clevenger on the show several years ago to talk about, I think it was right after he moved to IDW.
Right.
And so we were talking with him about that and then Atomic Robo in general. That was a fun conversation. Guy's got a great sense of humor, as you mm-hmm. could, you know, gather from reading Atomic Robo. Plus, anything that references Nikola Tesla, I'm on board for.
Right.
But now we have a, I guess, a trade, a collection of their latest Atomic Robo Presents Real Science Adventures series, and this is mm-hmm. the Nicodemus Job. Now, the artist on this is Meredith McLaren, so it's not Scott Wegner. But but anyway, it's still worth checking out. This is not like the regular Atomic Robo series. It's the Real Science Adventure series. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if I'll get it, but it's worth mentioning because it's Atomic Robo.
Yeah, and I've been intrigued because I like Atomic Robo too, and I've read multiple volumes of it. I bought it in trades, and I saw that they had a Real Science series. I was kind of intrigued about what it was, so maybe I'll check this out too, because I know at the beginning I thought it was going to be like actual real science, like true stories of scientists. Mm-hmm. I'm always on the lookout for stuff like that because I teach science teachers. But then I was like, oh, it's an Atomic Robo. But like you said, they've consistently been good series with excellent artwork. And yeah, I agree with you. This is something well worth checking out.
Hmm. So you say, where do you go in IDW?
I went to page 142.
Okay.
And this is, I'm going to say this is a bit of stunt casting just because it's a Rick and Morty book. It's Rick and Morty versus Dungeons and Dragons, which usually I do like Kyle Baker too. Kyle Starks is who I mean uh-huh. as a creator. And I like a lot of his creator owned stuff, but he does work on Rick and Morty, which I've looked at. I like the TV show fine. I'm not as, you know, in love with it as maybe some others are, but this book is written by Patrick Rothfuss. And do you know who he is?
No, I do not.
See, this is stunt casting. He is an author that writes a series called The Kingkiller Chronicles, which is it's supposed to be a trilogy. I think we've been waiting something like 12 years for book three, so he's kind of in like that George R. R. Martin territory. But his books, if I'm not usually a fantasy reader, and but his books are written incredibly beautifully. Like, his prose is just phenomenal, and you know, it's about this troubadour magician who gets into it. It's basically, he's got the secret for killing the bad things that are taking over the countryside, but he's decided to keep an inn.
Okay.
Anyway, But I love that series, and he's the author on this. And the fact that they got him to do a Dungeons and Dragons comic about Rick and Morty is hilarious and strange. And it'd be like, you know, getting, I don't know, Stephen Hawking to do real science or something like that. Not that you could do that right now, but you know what I mean. And, you know, and comics kind of have that tradition of, you know, finding a big name author to do things. But this to me just seems unique and not something I would typically pick up. But on that name alone, I would give it a go.
OK. Now, I have something on page 146 I want to probably briefly mention.
I might have the same thing. But
yeah. Do you have anything before that?
I do not.
Okay. Yeah, I wanted to mention the trade of the All Reds and Rich Tomasso's Dick Tracy Dead or Alive.
Oh, yeah.
Because you and I, yeah, you and I discussed that first issue, and we both really liked it. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know about you. I haven't read any issues since that first one. And it's primarily a matter of time. You know, I just, there's so many things that I want to read, and also I need to read for the podcast and its various series. I just haven't gotten around to it. But at the same time, I was kind of waiting for the trade. So I'm glad to see that the trade of Dick Tracy Dead or Alive is about to come out, and this will be an April release.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm like you. I haven't read issue two, although I will tell you this, and I was in Palm Springs at a conference, and there was an afternoon I ducked out, and there was two comic book stores that were literally 5 minutes apart. So I went to both of them.
Of course.
And one was, one was a much more like a modern comic store. We had a lot more new stuff. And I bought Dick Tracy number two there because it was there and I wanted to support a comic store, even, you know, with $4. And then I went to the other one and they had only back issues, or they had new stuff too, but they had a lot of back issues. So I bought a back issue. I bought like an issue of Marvel 2-in-1. All this to say, I have issue two. I haven't read it, but I'm like you. This is well worth picking up. It's gorgeous and I'm sure it'll be very fulfilling in the end. Mm.
I next go to page 150.
Oh, yeah, I am too on that one page. And we might have some synchronicity here.
Yeah, yeah. Great minds, as they say. there are two books that are listed there, but it's the second one that I wanted to point out.
Okay.
What about you?
I have both of them. I listed both of them because I was intrigued by both.
Why don't you talk about that first one and I can mention the second?
Yeah, the first one is called The Grave, and it's written by Dan Fraga, F-R-A-G-A. I'm going to go with Fraga. And this is it's a webcomic. It was drawn one panel a day for over a year. So it's something around 400 pages. On this it's 112. The one panel, there's a lot more than 112 one panels. I guess they put them together in a different way. But it's a murder mystery, and you know, it's about three boys who they find a shallow grave on a camping trip. And there's lots of little items and things that they're trying to figure out who's buried there. And, you know, it's like a weird version of it's almost like Stand By Me-ish. But I really liked what I saw because I went and looked at the website. And to me, this is a book I would check out. I would like to give this a go because it's like a crime book for kids or a crime book featuring kids. And I do like crime books. So,
yeah, I do as well, as I mentioned earlier. But, you know, as you know, they point out, this is one that features kids. So if you're a fan of Stand By Me or Stranger Things, then, and, you know, I'm a fan of both. Yeah, it may be worth checking out.
I'm going to give it a go.
Now, the second one on that page is the one that I had highlighted, and this is Diabolical Summer. This is written by Thierry Smaldron and art by Alexandra Clarice, I guess is how you pronounce the name. My assumption, since Smaldron is the writer, is that this is a work that originally came out in France and it's now been translated. So it's described as a groovy spy thriller and coming of age tale set in the go-go days of the 1960s. That's what grabbed me initially. Done in a chic retro style, sure to charm readers. And I do like to be charmed. For 15-year-old Antoine, the summer of 67 will prove to be an unforgettable one, full of new discoveries, a secret agent from nowhere, a mysterious troubled girl, and the disappearance of his father, all happening within 2 days. These events and more conspire to turn his life upside down and into something he could never have imagined. So this is going to be coming out in April. And I, you know, we could discuss this on the regular review show, but this is also mm-hmm. something that Pascal and I could cover in the monthly Eurocomic series.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's got lots of different features, I think, that make it, I don't know, it's genre bending, maybe, mm-hmm. or format bending. I'm like you. I was intrigued by it. It sounds like a great spy story, and I do like the setting and the artwork. I mean, I just really have the cover to go by. Looks very stylized and interesting, and that little car is awesome. Mm-hmm. So I'm excited to check this one out. So if you don't end up doing it on the Euro show, I would be up for doing it for the regular show. Just saying.
Okay. So I go to the next page.
I literally do too.
And both of those titles I'm interested in.
Ditto.
You want to talk about the first one?
Sure. It's called Springtime in Chernobyl, which it's probably not a fun thing. But it's a memoir of disaster, death, and tragedy, linking the events of the nuclear meltdown to the survivors who are still dealing with its effects. That's their blurb for it. Mm-hmm. And I really am intrigued by this book too, because it's, you know, it starts in 1986. Well, I'm not sure how it starts, but it's, you know, the context is set in 1986 during that Chernobyl disaster. At the time, Emmanuel Lepage was 19 year olds watching and listening. But then in 2008, he goes to Chernobyl to learn about the survivors and their children that are living in this area. And, you know, he knows that he's defying death, and he finds himself on a train there. And, you know, he keeps asking himself, I guess, what am I doing here? It just sounds like a great, like, it doesn't say it's nonfiction, does it? It's fiction. Well, it's a memoir, so it'll have fictional parts perhaps. But, you know, to me, this is just a fascinating kind of piece of history to mm-hmm. to look at. And you know, I have not kept up on what's going on in Chernobyl and since the disaster, so I'd be very intrigued to see what this book has in it.
Yeah, I'm wondering if this is a translation as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's interesting in that IDW has that Eurocomic series that Dean Mullaney edits. Right. Mm-hmm. And of course, those are all books in translation, obviously,
right,
because the imprint is Eurocomics. And in fact, their Eurocomics is one word. Our Eurocomics monthly series is two words, Euro and then comics.
Mm-hmm.
But they also publish quite a number of translations that aren't a part of Mullaney's imprint. Mm-hmm. And we were going to have Mullaney, and we still might. I don't know. But Pascal and I were going to talk with Dean Mullaney, going to interview him earlier this year. There were complications with both of us, with both Pascal and me losing, you know, significant family members, mm-hmm. or just family members, not significant family members, but family members. And then, you know, Dean was having at times scheduling problems as well. So we never got around to that interview. But one of the things I wanted to ask him is, what decisions go into deciding, you know, what will go into the Eurocomic series and what translations will be published by IDW that aren't a part of the Eurocomic series. So, for mm-hmm. instance, last year, you know, one of my favorite books of the year was the biography of Calamity Jane. I thought that was just outstanding. But that wasn't and that was a work in translation originally published in French, but it wasn't part of the Eurocomic series. So I'm just mm-hmm. curious. I mean, what goes into the Eurocomic series imprint and why?
Yeah, it's a good question. It's a good question, because I see here it was published in 2012 by Futuropolis in France. So this is originally a French work that's come over here, and I don't know. Yeah, I don't know what relationships there are for them to, you know, why they publish what they do in terms of and he did The Adventures of Kelvin. Is that right?
I don't know.
I don't remember that. That might not be the book I'm thinking about, but it's definitely an intriguing title, and yeah, I'm curious too as to how they kind of figure out what goes in what imprint and what doesn't. Mm-hmm. It's just fascinating to me how some of this stuff works, relationships speaking, like the behind the scenes stuff. But I definitely want to check this book out.
Mm-hmm. Now, the other one on that page is also really fascinating, and this is by Robert Grossman, Life on the Moon. It's at least on the, according to what I am assuming is the cover here, it's described as an illustrated novel. And I'm assuming that's a graphic novel. But it says, from the artist who reveled in the illustrated, the unillustratable, which I'm not familiar with, the historical graphic novel based on the Great Moon Hoax, the most successful newspaper hoax ever. In 1835, New York newspaper The Sun published a series of six articles declaring the discovery of life and even civilization on the moon, which the paper attributed to the famous contemporary astronomer Sir John Herschel. According to The Sun, the lunar inhabitants included unicorns, bison, bipedal, tailless beavers, and intelligent humanoids with bat-like wings. Life on the Moon is a full-length graphic novel. Okay, there you go, graphic novel, capturing this mythical world. And then it goes on. So, I mean, it does seem fun. It says that it includes real historical figures in the narrative, such as P.T. Barnum, Charles Goodyear, Jean-Jacques Audubon, and Edgar Allan Poe, among others.
This just sounds like fake news to me, Derek.
Yeah. But, you know, this – and I'm guessing that the Chernobyl book is not, but this is listed as a Yo book.
Yeah.
And that's interesting because I believe earlier this year, Craig was telling me that he wanted to start doing things other than collections, like archival type collections, you know, like his Haunted Horror series, or any of the books where he goes back and collects older comics into to new volumes that are arranged by author or theme. So this may be part of that initiative, even though this is a reprint. I don't know when this originally came out. I'm assuming that it's come out before. I don't know, though.
I'm not sure either. It's kind of this one needs a little bit of research because I'm thinking the same thing, because it sounds like something that might be, you know, more historical, just being, you know, what the content is and the focus. But maybe, I don't know, maybe this is an original work on a historical event.
Huh. Interesting. Now, I just looked it up on Amazon, and the cover listed on Amazon is completely different from the one we see in the previous catalog. But there's only one entry that comes up. I did a search on Life on the Moon in Grossman, and its release date is April 30th, at least in bookstores, 2019. So maybe this isn't a new edition of a previously published book.
Well, it's solicited for April release, according to the preview, so it could be. Could be a real, an original. Would that be a first for Yo Books?
What do you mean?
The first original, original publication, like not a reprint.
No. They did one earlier in the year. And I can't remember the title. I interviewed the creator, when it came out. Oh God, what was the title for that? It was a great book too. Who was that creator? I'm blanking now. Of course, as soon as I'm Dave Caliver. That's right.
Okay.
It was Dave Caliver, and it was Limbo Lounge.
Okay.
Okay. And that, I don't know if you're familiar with that, but that was a fun book. I think that may have been the first, if I'm not mistaken, original work published under the Yo Books imprint.
Well, this sounds – could be the second. Mm-hmm. It sounds fascinating. I know. They had me at bipedal tailless beavers, right?
Yeah. Now, speaking of Yo Books, I next go to page 153.
I'm with you on this.
Yeah. You want to talk about this?
Sure. It's I'd just say two words. The title is Ditko's Monsters, and that's all you need to know about this book. It looks like it's a smaller volume too. It's only 96 pages, but it's two famous monsters of filmland. They battle for your hearts and minds in this terrorific comic. It's Gorgo and Congo. So one's a giant ape monster and one's a giant lizard monster, and it's Ditko art. And that might be all I need to say to sell it, right? And it seems like it's a flip book too. It's got two covers, one on the front, one on the back, and there's a centerfold. So it sounds like there's a lot of to me, it sounds like this is just a fun little book, like as an artifact plus the content. So it's got monsters, it's got cool Ditko art, and it's a flip book. So it's, you know, you can read it one way, you can then you can flip it and read it the other way.
I'm wondering if this is, because how many pages is this?
96.
Okay. I would guess that this is a condensation of the two earlier books that he published in 2013. I don't know if you're familiar with those.
No.
But in 2013, I know first he published Ditko's Monsters, Gorgo. Mm-hmm. And then in later that year, he published, Yo Books published Ditko's Monsters, Conga. So they're okay. Two different texts. And I mean, I have both, and I think I may have even mentioned them briefly in one of our interviews with Craig. Mm-hmm. But it just strikes me that this is probably just selecting from those two volumes,
mm-hmm.
And including it in this one flipbook volume. Volume.
Easy for you to say.
It's interesting, though. It says that it is edited by Griffin Yo.
Mm-hmm.
I know that Craig has kids. I know he has a younger kid. Mm-hmm. With his current wife. I wonder if this is his older son with his previous from his previous marriage.
Gotcha.
I'll have to ask him. Of course, you know, we do plan on having him on the show for our Happy New Yo episode. I need to get in touch with him about that. You know, we were going to interview him earlier this year, but between his schedule and things going on specifically me, we just weren't able to get around. And, you know, we're at December now, so we may as well just wait until the Happy New Yo show.
That's right.
Yeah.
That sounds good to me.
But we can ask him about Griffin Yo.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Are you related? No. Hard-hitting question like that.
Yeah. It has to be. How many Yos are there in life?
Hey, two. Yo. Sorry. Thank you.
Okay, that's it. The podcast recording is over.
Yeah, we broke the audience and the mics with that. Sorry. Yeah.
Okay, after that, I go to page 155.
I'm on 156, so why don't you tell us about what's on 155?
Yeah, and this is something that's interesting to me. This is, I guess, the next narrative arc in Barnett and Simmons' Punk's Not Dead, and this is Punk's Not Dead, London Calling Number 1. Mm-hmm. Now, I remember discussing and reviewing for the podcast Punk's Not Dead number 1 a while back. I don't think I read past issue number 1. Maybe I read number 2. I thought it was an okay series. My feeling with Black Crown titles, and this is one, you know, mm-hmm. Shelley Bond's imprint with IDW. Some of the titles I really like, others I feel so-so about. I don't dislike, but they don't hit me on a gut level like some of them. I liked, I guess, well enough, Punk's Not Dead, mm-hmm. but I didn't finish the series. And I know that Punk's Not Dead, the first narrative arc, has been collected in a trade, I think. I guess that's out. But mm-hmm. here we have the first issue in the new, I guess, narrative arc, London Calling.
Well, it seems like this is the time to follow up.
Mm-hmm. But I'm much more interested in probably the same thing you're interested in on that next page, 156.
I'm actually interested in both, but that's because this is more stunt casting. Red Panda and Moon Bear is the first thing, and that's more of a children's book mm-hmm. or a young reader's book. But Jared Rosello is actually a friend of mine. And he's an academic, actually. He teaches at, I want to say, the University of Southern Florida, and he's in like the composition and creative writing department. If you're listening, forgive me for not doing my homework beforehand, but he does a lot of comics, and I've been at conferences with him where he talks about, you know, teaching people to do comics. And he had a series that was collected called The Well-Dressed Bear, which were similar in the style here, but they were definitely more, you know, existential and much more, you know, for a mature reader, not mature like it was adult, but I mean, for older readers. I don't think kids would be into, you know, an existential bear who wears ties. But this is more of a book for children. And I follow him on Instagram and I see things. So I've seen excerpts of this all throughout the last year. So I'm very excited for it just because, you know, I have that kind of personal connection to it. But he's very whimsical and he does a lot of fun things. And he's very thoughtful about what he does with comics and what he represents and things. So I just want to check this book out because well, he's my friend and I would support him, but I'm just intrigued by how it all holds together.
Mm-hmm. So, interesting. And, you know, that's something that I hope that Gwen will and Crystal will discuss on a future Young Reader show. So this is for a March release. And in fact, maybe one of the things you can do is email Gwen, because I send her emails all the time with recommendations, right, and she may get tired of that. So why don't you say, hey, this is a friend of mine. Check out Red Panda and Moon Bear.
Okay. She gets sick of both of us. I'm just teasing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you've got more room for her to get sick with you about. You know, I think I've already maybe used up her patience. But, no, Gwen is a sweetheart. She does an incredible job on the Young Reader show overseeing that. And just recently, Crystal Howard has come on as the co-host, and I think the two of them work really well together.
Yeah, I've listened to both of their shows, and I really like them.
Yeah. The other title on that page, A Shining Beacon, is something that I'm particularly interested in. This is written and drawn by James Albon. Mm-hmm. And the reason I'm excited about this is not just because of what the story seems to be about, which is in the solicit, but I had James Albon on the podcast last year, if you recall, for an interview when his book Her Bark and Her Bite came out from Top Shelf.
Yeah, I heard that one.
Yeah, that was a fun interview. And in fact, last year when Paul and I did our favorites of 2017, Her Bark and Her Bite wasn't one of my 10 favorites, but we also had a list of several titles in the, you know, almost made it or, you know, honorable mentioned. Her Bark, Her Bite was one of those.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, this looks cool, too. I agree with you. This is one of the ones. One of the things I noticed is that I wasn't just trying to double dip, but I was like, there were a lot of like, there's two books on this page, and I want both of them. For IDW, especially.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So this, it's IDW. It doesn't say that this is going to be a Top Shelf release. Now, the next page, we do have Top Shelf. But, Shining Beacon and Red Panda aren't listed as Top Shelf books. So maybe this is just straight IDW. Another thing I like about Albon's work is I tend to privilege, I guess, works of fiction.
Right.
In terms of graphic novels or comics, whatever you want to call them. I mean, there's nothing wrong with autobiography or memoir or how-tos or, you know, history or anything like that. But I really do enjoy works of fiction. And that's what Her Bark, Her Bite was about. And apparently what A Shining Beacon is as well.
Gotcha. No, this looks,
according to the solicit.
Right. Yeah, no, this looks fascinating to me. I definitely want to check it out. And the art, you know, I haven't read any of Albon's work, but I know that you're high on it, which that's a big recommendation for me. And the solicit on this was just excellent too. So I want to check out this book.
That's all I have in IDW. What about you?
I am the same.
Okay. Now, the next section is Dynamite Entertainment. Mm-hmm. Do you have anything in Dynamite?
I have two, but they're both collections.
Okay, go ahead.
And one is on page 186.
Oh,
which...
okay. Oh, I got something before that.
Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, and that is 174. Mm-hmm. This is Kirby Genesis, the Definitive Edition, and this is a hardcover in a slipcase, so it's going to be a little pricey. It comes out in February of next year, and it's listed at $95. I probably won't get it, but it is something to drool over because this is, you know, apparently based on Kirby's Genesis world, written by Kurt Busiek with art by Alex Ross and Jack Herbert. So, and we have some beautiful Alex Ross illustrations on page 174.
I had the same. This is one, if there was an honorable mentions for the preview, like I went through this and I gave a hard look to this because I was like, oh yeah, I mean, it's Kirby, it's Alex Ross, and it's Kurt Busiek, and I pored over this. I definitely lingered over these pages a lot more than I lingered over a lot of the other pages of this issue of previews, just because I agree with you. I mean, it's gorgeous. It's huge. And it's probably going to be a beautiful artifact. Discount Comic Book Service probably have it for a lot less than $95, though.
Oh, yeah. They're our sponsors. Of course they would.
Hey. And so this might be one of those, but that's – I kind of have a, I won't say a love hate with Alex Ross, but you know, there are things that he does that I love. And then there's times where I just kind of look at it and I'm like, you just got your neighbors to stand around. You lit them up in different ways and then painted them with costumes.
Yeah.
You know, which is easy for me to say, right. You know, as a non-technical artist like that, just dismissed. But you know, there's times where I love it and I love his like take on, you know, superheroic characters and, you know, other types of characters. And, you know, he's definitely a great cover artist. But this is, you know, and he's one of the few people I think that can do Kirby characters and do justice to like the Kirby-ish of them. The Kirby-ish? Is that a word? Kirby-ness is what I was going for. But yeah, I mean, it looks grand. It looks great. And I definitely would. $199. I would definitely buy this if it was maybe a quarter price. Just because I got kids in daycare, Derek. This is expensive.
Yeah. Now you had.
Oh, mentioned... I skipped down to the. I think I looked at the next thing. That's actually.
Yeah, that's the one that's signed by Ross and Busick. But without the signature, it's $95. But still, that's pricey.
Yeah.
And then. I have something, I guess, toward the end of the Dynamite section, but where do you go next in Dynamite?
I go to page 186, which is something I never thought I would say. But there's a Nancy Drew comic that I've read the first issue of, and it's written by Kelly Thompson, and it's got art by Jill St. Ong, and it's called The Case of the Cold Case, which that's a little clunky as a title, but it's like one of those, you know, I think Nancy Drew gets updated every 5 or 10 years. But this one I really enjoyed. I bought it just because I like Kelly Thompson as a writer on a lot of other titles. So I thought I'd give it a go. And I really like this. And, you know, it's not advertised in there, but the Hardy Boys are in here too. And, you know, they're updated. They have cell phones and all kinds of, you know, modern tech devices to them. And this is a lot better than I was going to give it credit to be. And, you know, I'm not historically like a Nancy Drew fan. I like you, like I like a crime. I was more of a Three Investigators guy or an Encyclopedia Brown guy when I was a kid. And but this book I really liked, and I will check out the trade of it. That's what I told myself. I was like, I'll buy the floppy, and I liked it, so I will check this out.
Yeah, you shouldn't be ashamed of wanting to read a Nancy Drew book.
Hey. The old ones are collector's items. Not that I have them, but this I will check out.
And then what other thing do you have in Dynamite?
I went to 191, which I guess.
We may just highlight the same thing then.
All right. Well, you start and I'll tell you if I'm with you.
Yeah. The Boys.
The Boys.
Yeah. Volume one. Omnibus, in fact. I mean, I'm not going to get this because I've already read through the Boys series. Did you?
Right.
Read the series?
Yes. Yeah, I bought them all in trade, and I read them all.
Yeah. I love the Boys. I think that this – Garth Ennis, I like his work. Sometimes it becomes a little too gratuitously violent or sexual, which I really don't have a problem with, but it doesn't really resonate with me as some of his other stuff. But, you know, sometimes he has things that really do blow me away. And so, yeah, written by Ennis with art by Derek Robertson. I love the Boys, and I'm glad that they're coming out with these omnibus editions. So this is going to be collecting issues 1 through 14, I guess.
So the first two trades.
Yeah. And 1 through 6, I think, was originally published through Wildstorm, correct? Or at least it was.
Yes.
The Boys was published by Wildstorm, and I can't remember for how many issues, but then it went to Dynamite.
Yeah, I think they got trigger shy about the content, because like you said, I think it got really sexual and really violent. And so Wildstorm, I think, kind of stepped back from it. And I agree with it. I think they went to Dynamite right after that.
The wimps.
They're really secretly just DC Comics.
Yeah, they are.
So they're like, no, we can't do this. But I love this series. I read the whole thing, and it's funny, and it's definitely I think the tagline on the original was like, "Who watches the Watchmen?" or "Who watches something?" It was like, "Who watches those people who watch the Watch?" You know, it was like. Yeah. there was multiple levels to it, but, you know, basically they're this crack team of agents. They're I think they're backed by this. Well, they're backed by the CIA, according to the solicit. So, and they kind of go out after the superheroes who are in this are more like, you know, decadent rock stars who just, you know, drug and whore their way through everything, through life, basically.
Yeah.
And, you know, mortals or average people be damned, because they're all kind of just collateral damage. And these guys kind of keep them in line. And one of them looks like, I'm interested because they're making it an Amazon series.
The Boys.
And yeah, Amazon Prime is they're going to have, that's part of why I think they're collecting them. But originally, Little Huey? What's his name in this? There's a Wee Huey, because he's Scottish. Mm-hmm. Was based visually on the actor Simon Pegg, who was in Shaun of the Dead, famously.
Okay.
But so Garth Ennis did that before Simon Pegg got famous. So his face was in this, like, they agreed that, okay, I will be in this comic and it will be based on your face. But I'm just kind of intrigued because now it's going to be a series and I don't think Simon Pegg's in it, but the guy looks like Simon Pegg in the comic. Mm. I'm like, why couldn't you get Simon Pegg to do it? I don't know. I'm kind of just, this is aside from the omnibus, but I'm just kind of, I'm curious as to whether or not how can you do this series and I have Simon Pegg in it somewhere just because he's so visual in the, you know, like he's in every issue because Wee Huey's in every issue.
Right. It's been a long time since I completed The Boys. So I'd like to, if I had the time, to go back and just reread everything.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That strikes me as one of those ones that might, I don't know, in my head, I suspect it that I would probably enjoy it the first time more than I would the second time. Mm-hmm. But I don't know.
That's all I have in Dynamite.
That might be for me too as well. Yep.
Now, the next section, and I think this is the last premium publisher, is Boom Studios. And I only have one thing in Boom.
And what page is that on?
That's on 194, the very first solicit.
Okay.
And
let's hear about it.
Yeah, this is an original graphic novel, Hotel Dare, written by Terry Bloss, illustrated by Claudia Aguirre. And I'm probably not going to get it, but it does strike me as interesting. And it's possibly something, again, that Gwen and Crystal could discuss on a young readers show. Because, I mean, obviously, this is geared toward younger readers. It says, Olive and her adopted siblings, Charlotte and Darwin, are spending the summer with their estranged grandma at her creepy hotel, and it's all work and no play. They're stuck inside doing boring chores until they stumble upon an incredible secret. Behind each door of the hotel lies a portal to a strange and mysterious place. And then there's more to the solicit after that. But I guess that gives you a taste of things. You know, the thing about Boom is, you know, sometimes they have ongoing series like Backstagers, right?
Right.
That are specifically geared toward younger readers. And I think that Gwen and I can't remember if it was Andy Wolverton or Paul at the time, who was her co-host on the Young Reader Show. But when the first issue of Backstagers came out, they discussed it. But every now and again, Boom will do, you know, what they call an original graphic novel, right? So Hotel Dare didn't originally appear as a miniseries. It's Blaz's and Aguirre's original graphic novel. So, and there's a benefit to that. But this is something that they could discuss. And I'd be interested in hearing their take on this because it does look interesting.
Yeah. And this is one of the ones I noted too, because actually I did note this one. I just didn't realize it was in the Boom. But I had read another book that Terry Bloss had written for them. And I think it's also an original graphic. I think it was actually for Oni Press that he did, but it was called Deadweight. It was about it was a murder mystery at a fat camp for kids. So it was very interesting. Yeah, I know. It was a fun book in a lot of ways. I mean, I wouldn't say it was the greatest thing I ever read, but I really enjoyed it. And the mystery part was not solvable. You know, that's one of those issues that some people have with reading a mystery in, you know, in any format, really, or experiencing a mystery. You know, it's like when the authors are holding things back from you. And, you know, it's like that movie Murder by Death, where the one guy just gets revenge on all the authors for improbable plot twists and all kinds of things like that. But it's fun plotting, and the characters look cool. One of them's got a rat on his shoulder, so, you know, if nothing else, we have that.
Let's go ahead and move on to the green section, or the back half, or the smaller publishers, whatever you want to call the collection of solicits that are not part of the premier publisher section.
Okay.
And I don't have anything until the Aftershock pages, beginning on page 232.
Mm-hmm. I have a couple things beforehand.
Okay.
On I think it's 224. That's the first page. And, I start with the beginning, which, you know, there's a part of me that I know what Dave Sims like, and I know what his personality is like, and I've read some things, and I don't always agree with him. Well, that's like an understatement. I largely disagree with him, but I kind of still have this curiosity for reading his book, almost like, what's the word? With interrogation. Like, I like interrogating his work. Like, I still think it's well done. I still think it's smart. I think it's from a really weird place, but there's a one shot called, you know, Sim City. And it looks like a Sin City parody on the cover, at least, you know, a Dave to kill for. And, it's an original 24 page issue with 29% new art, which, you know, I'll buy it. I probably will get this and just read it, but to see kind of what it's, about. Even though it's you know, it's Dave Sim.
Yeah. Well, you know, he's been doing this for quite a number of months now, coming out with these one-shot Cerebus issues that, at least on the covers, are parodies of famous, or at least semi-famous, covers in comics history.
Yeah. And I'd read, I think, Glamour Puss. That was the series he did a few years ago, which were basically essays.
Right. Yeah.
They were basically essays with,
about that.
Russ Heath type art pinups, basically. So like the story and the art did not necessarily match up. But it was interesting to read, like intellectually, it was interesting to read. I don't know if I will say I enjoyed it, but every now and then I don't mind checking out something like this.
Mm-hmm. What do you have after that?
After that, this is just new to me. You know, there's a couple of Terry Moore things on the same page, which I guess are Abstract Studios. But I think they're more resolicits. But there is a new version of Strangers in Paradise, which is
issue number 10. Yeah.
There's a new pocket trade. I think they're starting it all over again.
That's a resolicit.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and this came out years ago. And in fact, I think I have this pocket volume one of Strangers in Paradise.
Well, then.
Yeah, the only thing that's new under Abstract Studios is Strangers in Paradise 25, issue number 10. Everything else, you know, this pocket volume, the Motor Girl omnibus, and the Rachel Rising omnibus are all resolicits, which he often does in his Abstract Studios section.
Well, shame on me for not knowing that. But if you like Stranger Things, if you like Strangers in Paradise, that pocket volume is probably the best way to start.
Yeah,
then it
is.
All right. Then I don't have anything after that until 279.
Okay. Yeah. On 232, and this is the first page of the Aftershock section. This is a first issue of a new series, Stronghold, written by Phil Hester with art by Ryan Kelly. It had gotten to the point that after, and I've said this on the show a couple of times previously, Aftershock had been coming out with so many series that it was kind of like what I was saying about Hellboy. I felt overwhelmed, and so I kind of pulled back, right?
Right.
And so even with the preview shows, I quit mentioning new number ones from new series from Aftershock, because again, there's just so many that have come out. But they got a couple of number one issues from new series that seemed interesting this month to me. Stronghold seems interesting. I like the creative team. It says, our planet is actually a prison designed to both trap and shelter amnesiac alien entity of incalculable power. Now known as Michael Gray, this cosmic angel of destruction currently believes himself to be an ordinary Midwestern insurance underwriter who belongs to a global secret society dedicated to making sure he never discovers the truth about his past. So that seemed interesting to me. Mm-hmm. And then Kelly's art, and we have some samples of that on the next page, seemed interesting. Mm-hmm. And then the other number one of a new series on page 234 is where the solicit is Oberon number one. And this seems to be more fantastical. Since betrayed by his people and exiled to Earth, Lord Oberon, the former king of the fairy, seeks out an innocent prophesied child in order to manipulate her into becoming his ultimate weapon so that he can reclaim his rightful throne. And this is written by Ryan Parrott with art by Milos Slakovic. Seems interesting. I don't know if I'll get them, but I do like Aftershock and what they do. Sometimes, at least for me, some of their titles seem to fly under the radar. I don't pay attention to Aftershock as much as I probably should. Mm-hmm. But those did seem to be a couple of interesting titles.
Well, I've never read an Aftershock comic that I know of, so I'd be up for reading either of these. They both look very interesting.
Well, maybe something we can review in the future.
That sounds good to me.
In February, yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, after that, I go to – and you say you have something on 250-some?
It's a while. 279, actually.
Okay. So, yeah, I've got some things before that.
Sure.
On page 245 is Rad Erwank and Conspiracy Dog, and this is a one-shot. This is by Lukasz Kowalczyk and Jack Teagle, written by Kowalczyk and illustrated by Teagle, I guess, and Kowalczyk. Zuck, I guess I'm pronouncing that name correctly. And the reason I was drawn to this is it's published by Alternative Comics, and I like what Alternative Comics does. And in fact, I was just emailing the publisher, Mark, last week about just a couple of things. He's a nice guy. But this seems interesting. It says, double feature fueled with slime. Rad Erwank is an epic story of heroes and villains with mundane problems. Conspiracy Dog is a gruff, chain-smoking, poop-sniffing pooch chewing on the trouser leg of truth. The secret government ain't gonna muzzle him, no siree. So that's a fun solicit, and again, Alternative Comics does really good stuff, so I'd like to check that out.
And I actually follow Jack Teagle on Instagram, I think. I really like his artwork, so I totally miss that aspect of it, so... That's cool. It looks great, actually. Like, it looks very fun.
And then on page 266, there are a couple of titles that seemed interesting to me. Under Arcana Studio, it is Gregory Schoen and Alonzo Molina's Raygun. And the reason I wanted to mention that is, you know, as I said earlier, any comic that takes on Nikola Tesla is worth looking at. Well, this includes Nikola Tesla. It says, when troubled 10-year-old Matthew Baker finds Nikola Tesla's fabled ray gun, he sets out on a voyage of self-discovery that will change the world forever. So that seems interesting. And then right under that is a title from the publisher, A Wave Blue World. And this is Loved and Lost by Tyler Chin Tanner and art by Jason Copeland. Says, sometimes you get lucky, sometimes you get burned. These nine stories take an honest look at modern romance with all of its imperfections. So it's a collection of stories. I wonder if they're linked in any way outside of thematically, but the cover looks interesting. The description is intriguing. So I'd be willing to check it out.
Cool. That does sound, they do sound fun.
And then after that, I do go to 279, which is, I think, where you are.
Are you on Lucky Luke?
Actually, I was going to mention the two other Cinebook titles there, but I like Lucky Luke.
Okay.
But here, it's interesting. Now, you know, you're right. Cinebook had been publishing Lucky Luke individual volumes, right? The bande dessinée.
Right.
But here we have a complete collection. So if, you know, you didn't want to get a lot of the earlier Lucky Luke bande dessinée, which are relatively short.
And, right.
But if you get a lot of them, they could be expensive. This may be your economical alternative.
Yeah. And Lucky Luke's one of those things that I've been aware of it for a long time. And when I was a kid, I went to Greece pretty much every summer as a kid, which I know I was spoiled. And I was into comics. So I always looked for things. And Lucky Luke is one of those titles that I always saw and never bought. And it was always in languages I couldn't read. So this is more like curiosity, because I know it's classic and I know it's been out for, 70 years. And so there's a part of me that, this is mostly, like you said, I don't have the individual bande dessinées. So I need some, to me, this is attractive because I can get a big chunk of it and see what it's all about. Mm-hmm. So that's my attraction to it.
Yeah, I've read, quite a number of Lucky Luke volumes. It's fun. They're not heavy books. They're comedies. They're kind of light. And this is, Rene Grosseny and Morris doing the art.
Right.
But it's a classic. And in fact, I think it was when Edward was doing the Eurocomic show with me, we looked at, this is maybe about a year ago, a number of comics in translation, European comics, that were Westerns.
Right.
And we looked at one, maybe two volumes of, maybe we looked at the time, the most recent Cinebook release of Lucky Luke, along with others like Bouncer.
Right.
Jodorowsky's Bouncer, among other books. So, yeah. I really do like what Europeans do with the American Western genre. Not that the Americans don't handle it well, but I guess I really appreciate an outsider's view, a non-U.S. creator looking at what's usually defined as kind of a prototypical American genre, right? The American West, of course, American creators, writers, artists would best deal with that. But I think that the Europeans have a different perspective on it.
Yeah. And it's exactly like you say, like seeing those things reinterpreted through, different culture are very fascinating to me. Plus, it being a classic, I feel like I'm missing out. So I need to check this book out.
Yeah. Now, the other two books that are listed in the Cinebook section, Beartooth Volume 3 and then Trent Volume 4, these are both titles that Pascal and I have kind of lightly talked about covering on a future Eurocomic show, but we just haven't yet. But both Beartooth and Trent are series that I would like to look at least on my own. But, I'd like to cover them for the Eurocomic series.
Gotcha.
After that, I don't have anything until the Drawn in Quarterly section, which begins on page 283.
That's where I go too, actually.
Okay. Which title or titles struck your attention?
There were two. The first one is Credo, which is the Rose Wilder Lane story, and it's by Pete Bagg, and it's I don't think it's formally a series, but he's been in the last few years putting out a book or so a year on some notable historical figure.
Woman.
And they've all been women. You're right. And
revolutionary women.
Right. And I think that they tie into his kind of libertarian viewpoint of the world.
Right.
This one probably most explicitly. But he did one on
Margaret Sanger.
Yes. Margaret Sanger was the first. And then the second.
Sora Neale Hurston.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So. And Pete Bagg is one of my, all-time comics creators. Like I pretty much read everything he does, and I've loved him for a number of years. And I'm kind of interested. I know almost next to nothing specifically about Rose Wilder Lane, although I know what I do know is that I should probably revile her. but I'm kind of interested to see his take, because he's another one of those guys who he does political comics, and he's definitely got a viewpoint. In a number of manners of speaking. And I'm always, I won't say his comics are essential reading, but for everybody, but they are for me.
Yeah, no, I think that especially Hate is essential reading.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, if you're into comics and you haven't read Hate,
right,
what's your problem?
Right. Right. Or Neat Stuff at, you know, come on. Neat Stuff was pretty cool too.
Yeah. Neat Stuff as well. And in fact, damn it, that reminds me, I was back home last week, if you recall, mm-hmm. In Frisco, and I meant to bring my collected Neat Stuff. You know, it comes in a case back with me, mm-hmm. and I forgot it.
Oh,
geez. I'll have to get it next time I'm there. But yeah. Yeah, I have had Peter on the show when the earlier two biographies came out. I think right after the Margaret Sanger book came out, I spoke with him at the Dallas Comic Con. I can't remember, like Fan Days. I can't remember what they call it. Mm-hmm. But he was there. And what we did was over 2 days, we did a series of, I don't know, 15, 20 minute interviews, because we would stop, because every now and again someone would come by and want an autograph or a print or something, and mm-hmm. you know, he would, you know, understandably so, attend to the people who, you know, were wanting to buy things from him. And so we did the interview in chunks, and it worked out really well. But he talked about the Sanger book at the time, and then mm-hmm. when the Zora Neale Hurston book came out, I had him on for an interview via Skype in a more leisurely way. So that was a fun interview. So if you're interested, when Credo comes out, we can have Peter back on the show and you and I can talk with him.
Hey, I've met him a few times. He's a great guy to talk to. So
he really is.
I'd be interested in that for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, you may not necessarily agree with his libertarian take on things, but I think he did tell me when I asked him toward the end of the Zora Neale Hurston interview, you know, what other figures are you going to mm-hmm. be working on? And he mentioned Rose Wilder Lane. So this is something he's been working on for a while.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's definitely got a I don't know if it's a finite series, but he's got a sequence of people that he wants to write about for sure.
What was the other book in Drunning?
I was going to ask you that.
What were you going to go? Well, the one that is solicited right above that, Michael DeForge's Leaving Richard's Valley.
Aha. I should have suspected.
Yeah, I really like DeForge, and mm-hmm. you know, whether he publishes under Drunen Quarterly or Koyama, I know that Leaving Richard's Valley is something that he had been publishing through, and I can't remember what social media platform. I don't know if it's Twitter or Instagram or what, but it's mm-hmm. something that I haven't read, but I remember being at Small Press Expo earlier this year. I kept hearing about Leaving Richard's Valley, and I thought to myself, oh, I got to check this out. Mm-hmm. I never got around to that, but now it's going to come out in book form. So yeah, this is something that I would be interested in. It says, Richard is a benevolent but tough leader who oversees everything that happens in the valley. When Lyle the raccoon becomes sick, his ragtag group of friends take matters into their own hands, breaking Richard's strict rules. Caroline Frog rats them out, play on words, I guess, to Richard, and they are immediately exiled from the only world they've ever known. DeForge's tale expands from a bizarre hero's quest into something more. They make it out of the valley and into the big city, and we see them coming to terms with the different kinds of community: noise rockers, gentrification protesters, squatters, and more. So to say that it expands from a bizarre hero's quest is probably putting it lightly when it comes to DeForge.
Mm-hmm.
You know, strange narratives, but I really do like his work.
Oh yeah. He's one of those, I won't say it's required reading either, but something like, he's one of those people that's just doing interesting stuff with comics, and mm-hmm. he's always worth checking out with whatever he puts out, just because, you know, it's going to be, you know, it's going to be provocative, like, or thought provoking, you know, and in some manner, because he's, I don't know, the way he represents things, his idea about story and layout and all that is very, I don't know, I think he pushes the edge on comics a lot. And mm-hmm. he's fun to read too. Like, you know, it's not just like academic reading. It's like, it's challenging, thoughtful, and fun.
Right. Yeah. And we have resolicits of some of his other earlier Drawn and Quarterly books, like Ant Colony and First Year Healthy. And mm-hmm. in fact, on the next page, we have the aforementioned bag biographies of Zora Neale Hurston, Fire,
right.
and then Margaret Sanger, Woman Rebel.
There they are.
So what was the second book in Drawn and Quarterly
you wanted? Oh, no, you picked it.
Oh, so that was Leaving Richard's Valley. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Yep. I gravitated towards bag because I love bag.
Yeah, I do too. Okay. And then after that, and this is usually the case, right? Right after Drawn and Quarterly, one of my favorite publishers, there's another one of my favorite publishers, Fantagraphics.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, and as always, in Fantagraphics section is page 290 and then 291. Mm-hmm. As always, a lot of stuff worth mentioning.
Oh, yeah.
Now, you know, the first solicits are the complete Krapox Volume 4 and then Krapox Volumes 3 and 4, the box set. Are you familiar with Krapox?
I am.
How do you pronounce his name?
Your guess is better than mine, so I would say yes. I mean, I remember I've seen a thing or two. He did the Story of O, I think, the adaptation of that. I believe. See, what I remember about him is that his stuff was like, I don't know, as a kid, you'd get Heavy Metal Magazine, or I would get Heavy Metal Magazine, and there'd be all these books solicited in it, and they all looked like very adult and mature. And, you know, that was kind of my introduction to him. And I was always like, oh, this is very forbidden, and it's sexy.
Mm-hmm.
And I've read some things of his. I love his artwork. His artwork is phenomenal.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, I haven't read a whole lot of it. I just know that Fantagraphics is putting it all out.
Yeah, and I want to read it.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
Excuse me. Underneath that are some interesting titles. One of the ones that immediately got my attention is a new book by Mary Fleener, and we mm-hmm. really haven't seen much from her in a long time. And for those who may not be familiar, you know, Fleener is one of those women creators who I guess was quite prominent in the underground movement, mm-hmm. Especially during the 1970s. So, you know, she, I guess she was a part of a lot of those comics, like women's comics,
right?
Women, WIMMEN,
right?
So, but we haven't seen much from her lately. This seems to be a different kind of book for her. In fact, they say that this is her first original graphic novel, and it's called mm-hmm. Billy the Bee.
Yeah. Yeah, I noted this one, too, because I agree with you. She's one of those in the 90s. She had an anthology, I think, through Fantagraphics called right. Slutburger that I loved. Uh-huh. It was one of my must reads. And yeah, like you said, she's just kind of fallen off the comics radar. I haven't seen anything from her in a very long time. Mm-hmm. And so I was intrigued by this too, just because it doesn't look like what I expect from her. But at the same time, I mean, the one excerpt we get definitely looks like her art style, just not as abstracted. Mm-hmm. but this is, you know, I'd be interested to check this out because it sounds very simplistic, almost like a children's book or something like that. But in my mind, it might be something more, more like a Frank comic, like a Jim Woodring Frank comic, where it could technically be all ages, although it goes places that, I don't think most kids want to go reading a picture book.
Yeah.
Or, you know, like a quote funny animal book.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting that you should mention this might seem like a book for younger readers, because right next to it are a couple of titles that specifically are for younger readers. And mm-hmm. this has me wondering, is Fantagraphics, because I'm not aware of this, is Fantagraphics now making an effort to put out books for younger readers?
I'm not sure. I know. I thought the same thing, because that book right next to the Eddie Spaghetti book by Ritu Modan.
Right. Based on a work from Arye Nevon and Leah Goldberg. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So these are, I guess, Israeli writers, and Modan is adapting this. So
right.
This is definitely, both in terms of what seems to be the size and also the cover art, is for younger readers.
Mm-hmm.
And then underneath it is a similar book in terms of size and art. It's called Mr. Fibber. Mm-hmm. By Jeremy Pincus, is based on the work of Leah Goldberg again. So I'm wondering if Fantagraphics is making more of an effort to put out books for younger readers, which would make sense.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a market, and there doesn't seem to be too many people, especially for the very young readers. I mean, the Mr. Fibber says it's for children 4 and up. Mm-hmm. Designed for them. I mean, like, there's Toon books.
Yeah, they could be in certain ways kind of cutting into what Toon's doing, right?
Right, right.
Yeah.
That's what these look like to me. I mean, not like knockoffs, but, you know, in terms of format maybe. And definitely content. I mean, but the art styles are unique.
And on that next page, 291, there are several titles there that I'm interested in as well. At the top of the page, we have the second volume of Jacques Tardy's René Tardy, Prisoner of War at Stalag 11B. And if you recall, the first volume of this was solicited several months ago. I think that the issue's already come out, but now we have the second volume. I like the work of Tardy. I've been wanting for a long time now to use one of our Eurocomic episodes to do a focus on what Fantagraphics over the past several years has been doing with Tardy. Although that'd be a lot of reading and a long discussion. But at least looking at several of Tardy books, not maybe all of them. But I'd love to do a Tardy show.
Yeah. He's one of those I mean, you talk about classic, and I mean, I've read a lot of his things, you know, in various anthologies, and I've read a book or two, but yeah, it's, I mean, they're masterful. They're gorgeous. They're grim. They're all kinds of things. And definitely something worth tackling. And, like you said, it's, there's a lot to talk about. So yeah, I wasn't planning on buying this, mostly just because economics, but I'm glad that they're there because they're books that I would definitely love. Like, if, like you said, wish list. Like, this is a wish list book for me.
One that's listed right under that seems fascinating as well. The Perineum Technique.
Oh yeah.
And this is by Rupert and Mulot. And so I guess this is another translation. Yeah, it says it was originally serialized in the pages of Le Monde. It says it's one of France's most acclaimed graphic novels of recent years, something like Eyes Wide Shut for the Online Age. Yeah.
Yeah, I noted that one, too. It was definitely something that stood out to me as, you know, I'd be interested in seeing, you know, Fantagraphics just puts out great books in general. And this one was one of those ones that just jumped out at me as, you know, what is this like? And, you know, and especially it being one of France's most acclaimed graphic novels, you know, I hadn't been aware of the title at all. And to me, it's definitely something I would check out.
Yeah. And it's something that Pascal and I should talk about on a Eurocomic show.
For real.
Yeah.
Listen to me, for real.
Yeah. And then I guess the last thing from Fantagraphics I wanted to highlight is what's at the bottom of the page underneath a Perineum Technique. And that is Darla Tessler's Cult of the Ibis.
Darla. I think it's Daria.
Is it Daria?
Yeah. Yeah, I got it blown up big.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'm looking at it kind of smaller, and I thought that I was an L. So Daria Tessler. And this is part of Fantagraphics Underground in print, which I know their FU series.
Right.
Which is actually, when I had Gary Groth on the show for an interview early in the year, that's what he called it, the FU series.
Hey.
I think originally the Fantagraphics Underground imprint were books that you could only get directly from them or maybe order through places like your comic shop, right? Or Discount Comic Book Service, our sponsor. But then they changed that after a while to where, you know, if you go to a bookstore, you go to Amazon, you can find the Fantagraphics Underground titles as well. But this seems interesting. It says it's a mostly silent graphic novel.
Yeah. And inspired by German expressionistic films, too, which to me, visually, I didn't see a lot. This is one of the books that I Googled, you know, after looking at it, just see if I can find some like excerpts or things. And I really had a hard time finding it. But I'm very intrigued by it as well.
Yeah. It says it's the story of an occultist getaway driver who, after escaping with the loot from a bank robbery gone wrong, orders a build-your-own homunculus kit and goes on the lam.
Another one of those stories?
Yeah. God, everybody's doing those, you know, build-your-own homunculus narratives.
That's right. Yeah, it's definitely it's up on my list, too. And this one I'd love to check out.
Yeah. Anything else in Fantagraphics?
No, I don't.
The next page on to 294, we have First Second.
Yes.
There are a number of titles here that are worth mentioning. And I guess this first one by Kevin Panetta and Savannah Ganchu Bloom.
Yes.
Seems really interesting. Now, this does seem to be geared toward kind of teenage, younger readers, just given the topic.
Right.
It says, a thoughtful and endearing gay YA romance set in a bakery. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, this seems interesting. And then right under that, we have a new book by Lucy. Is it Knisley or Knisley?
I think it's Knisley.
That's what I think. I guess this is about having a child. Kid gloves, 9 months of careful chaos.
Yeah, she's one of those creators that I follow on Instagram. I think I'm on her Patreon. So I've seen bits and pieces of this book throughout the years. And she had a very difficult pregnancy. She had some medical complications. So there's definitely going to be a lot of medical drama. But she's also very, have you read some of her other works?
Actually, I have a couple of her books. I just haven't read them yet.
I read Something Borrowed, I think it was called.
Is that the one about the wedding?
Right, right.
Yeah, I've got that one.
And the one before that, which I'm blanking on right now, but it's kind of like a cookbook. It's got recipes in it. It's not really a cookbook.
Yeah, but, you're right. Yeah.
But I love her point of view, and I think she's from Rhinebeck, New York, which is not that far from where I grew up. And so, you know, I kind of had a personal connection, and she's just full of humor, and her observations are, I don't know. I just think that they're witty and fun, and, you know, as a kind of a new parent reading some of these things, like there's a lot for me that I kind of relate to. And it's just, to me, I'm really looking forward to this. And she's been, I think on her Instagram, she's been counting down the weeks to this book coming out. I think it's something like 12 weeks at this point, which, you know, kind of goes with the theme, I guess, of the, you know, childbirth. You know, you're counting down the time too. But really looking forward to this book.
Maybe we can have her on for an interview.
That would be cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's got her, and her kid is adorable because now he's like 2 or 3 and he is, she puts pictures. I think she calls him just Pal. Because he was born, I forget when he was born, but it's a palindrome. It was like during that June of 2016, where you could have palindrome birth dates. Like he's born in there. So she doesn't have his real name. She just calls him Pal because he's a palindrome.
Yeah.
I have two books on this page too, though.
Which ones?
The Makers comics.
I wanted to note that because is this a new series?
It is. These are the first two volumes.
Okay.
Yeah. These are the first two. And I don't know if you've read any of the Science comics.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah. I love Science comics.
I think this is kind of like a parallel kind of series to go with it.
Practical.
Yeah.
Like how-tos.
Right. More so. And some of the same authors, Fallon Koch did, I forget which book she did, but she did one of the Science comic books. And Chris Schweitzer is doing
Coke.
Oh, it's a good question. I'm going Koch because.
Okay.
Why not? Fallon, please call us and tell us. and Chris Schweitzer, who does a car one. And I don't know. I've read lots of things Chris Schweitzer does, and I think I'm on his Patreon too.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm looking forward to it. I saw it in his something. He published something either on Instagram or Twitter or something, like some excerpts from it or some images from it. So I'm excited because those Science comic books are excellent. And I know that Gwen and Crystal just reviewed, I think, the Brain volume that just came out. So I'm really looking forward to these books just because they're different and you said, practical.
Yeah. So Maker Comics, Bake Like a Pro by either Koch or Koch, Coke. And then Maker Comics, Fix a Car by Schweitzer. So it's an interesting new series.
Yeah. And they're putting two out simultaneously, I think, to kind of, you know.
To launch it?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
They're meant to come out at the same time.
The one under that seems interesting, but for maybe more mature readers.
Yes.
And this is titled PTSD by Guillaume Senglin, and I'm wondering if this is a translation. And it could be, because every now and again, First Second does translations. I think they used to do more than they do now.
Yeah.
It says, it's the solicit reads, in this uniquely imagined world of speculative fiction, a veteran finds herself marooned in her own city and haunted by her memories. After returning home from an unpopular war, Jen becomes an outsider in an indifferent world. Alone, desperate, and suffering from wounds both mental and physical, she seeks relief in the illicit drugs and she manages to purchase or steal. And then it goes on from there. But yeah, this does seem to be for more mature readers.
Yeah, I noted that one too. That one, I've really enjoyed the sci-fi books that they have put out. Mm-hmm. I know that is it Spill Zone and a few other series. I've really liked them. And yeah, this one definitely intrigued me. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot here that I would definitely want to check out. And it does sound more mature than their typical. I think they typically try to go for like a YA audience. Although Kid Gloves and PTSD might be, much more mature than that.
Yeah. And the only other thing in First Second that I wanted to mention, and this is on page 294, this is Secret Coders, the Complete Box Set by Jade Luen Yang and Mike Holmes. I've read that first volume of Secret Coders, and I really enjoyed it. But I haven't kept up with the subsequent volumes. But I know, again, coming back to Gwen, this is something that she is really excited about. Yang and Holmes's Secret Coders, very educational comics, presenting coding, math, computers in a way that is understandable and digestible, not only to younger readers, but also older folk like us.
Yeah. I've read all the books except for the last one, and I've liked them. And I think Crystal said on the show that she either taught it or she's doing something with it, with the series. So, this is definitely something I think that's on their radar. And, I wouldn't buy this version of it because I have them all, but I think that, if you know somebody who has kids that they're into computers or math, and this is a great book, and they're a lot of fun in terms of I won't say didactic, but the pedagogical. I learned stuff from it, and I'm an adult.
Okay, after First Second, I don't have anything until page 301.
Yeah, I don't have anything really until 305.
Okay.
So,
yeah. On 301, and this is published, or is going to be published by HarperCollins, and this is written and drawn by Jerry Kraft. It's called New Kid.
Uh-huh.
And the thing that got my attention about the solicit, it says it is for, fans of Raina Telgemeier and Jean Louine Yang, speaking of which, and, it's about a 12-year-old kid from Washington Heights who starts his seventh grade year at a new posh private school where diversity is low and the struggle to fit in is real, as the solicit states. And so I don't know. I'm not going to get this book, I'm sure, but it's something that I think is worth checking out. It's interesting. And again, yet another title that Gwen and Crystal can discuss on their Young Reader series. I don't know if Gwen or Crystal listens to our preview shows, but they should, because we give them a lot of suggestions here. But yeah, this is something that seems interesting to me. Another thing that's notable on the next page, 302, is a solicit for Hogan's Alley number 22. And the reason I mention this is, I guess, for a couple of reasons. One, its publisher editor, Tom Hingens, is a friend of mine. Every year at, do you know Tom?
I don't.
Okay. Yeah. Every year at Heroes, I usually hang out with him. He's really good friends with Craig. And often the three of us and more will go out to dinner one or more nights of the con. Tom's a great guy, really good friend. Another reason I mention this is I don't recall ever seeing Hogan's Alley solicited in a previews catalog. Maybe it has, and it's a magazine, by the way. Maybe it has. I just haven't noticed, or I don't remember.
Well, hey, I've read issues. I'm not going to say I read it regularly, but I've really liked what I have read in Hogan's Alley. So. Mm-hmm. And I like a good historical magazine about comics.
Yeah. So worth checking out if you're not already familiar with Hogan's Alley.
For sure.
Yeah. Now on three, you say you have something on 305?
I do, but it's the Incal, and it's okay. A big collected version.
Yeah, yeah. I wanted to highlight that as well. But on that previous page, there are a couple of other titles. Under Houghton Mifflin, Harcourt is an adaptation of The Giver.
Right.
You know, now The Giver is one of those, you know, books that is read by many, you know, first year high school and college students.
Oh, yeah.
Especially in high school. But now we have Lowry's Giver in comics form, and P. Craig Russell is doing the, I guess, the adaptation and the art.
Yeah. And I missed that, actually. I saw there was an adaptation, and I just went, oh, an adaptation. But P. Craig Russell is, that's a big name for an adaptation.
It is. It is. Yeah, there have been more and more adaptations coming out recently. You know, you and I just got review copies of the graphic novel version of To Kill a Mockingbird. Last year, there was The Good Earth. And there have been adaptations of a variety of other texts that have come out this year alone.
Right.
You know, maybe at some point we can do a special episode where we just look at these adaptations.
Yeah, I think we have an Anne Frank, the Diary Anne Frank, I got an adaptation of. And I just got an Iliad by Gareth Hines, just in an Iliad one.
Yep, I did as well. So, yeah, we'd have plenty to discuss if we did that.
I smell a theme.
I smell a theme, yeah. the book under that, and this is Humanoids, which again does the Inkel Oversized Deluxe.
Right.
But this is a book by Philippe Caudray, Bigby Bear.
Right.
So this is a series of vignettes on imagination, science, mathematics, and the life of our planet shared from the perspective of a curious bear and his furry forest-dwelling friends. I know that Humanoids over the past year or two has made more of an effort to put out translations that would be, let's say, oriented toward younger readers. And this may be one of those attempts. It does seem interesting, educational, and fun.
Yeah. And it's got little rabbit friends. So it's got something for everyone.
It says a feel good tale for all ages.
Hey.
And we all need a good feel good tale, right?
That's true. I didn't even know Humanoids did all ages books. So good on them.
But then we get to the next page. And like you, I had highlighted the Incal Oversized Deluxe Limited Edition hardcover by, of course, Jodorowsky and Mobius.
Oh, yeah, that's a big pricey one, but
I'm not going to get it. Yeah.
It's gorgeous. Mobius is one of those people that I think just, you know, if they're, I don't believe on, you know, necessarily in life and from other planets among us, but if there was a person like that, I mean, his artwork is just beyond most people's artwork. And it's like, you know, he's like I don't know. It just blows me away every time I read anything by him, pretty much. And this book especially is some of his most fantastical and wonderful artwork.
Yeah. Now, have you read The Inkle?
Yes.
See, I haven't. That again is another one of my holes in terms of comics reading, comics history. And it's something that on a recent Eurocomics episode I was talking with Pascal about. And of course, he's read all of the Incal series. But I haven't. And I really need to. Now, I'm not going to get this, you know, Oversized Deluxe Limited Edition. But I probably should get from Humanoids the other, or at least the original Incal series.
A few years ago, I mean, my hedge on having read them all, I have read them all, but I read them all as digital comics. So I've never held hard copies of all of them. So, you know, a few years ago,
more economical.
Yeah, they were. And Comixology had a sale or something, so they were all like $3. So I was like, I'll buy, you know, like the four core titles anyway, or the four core, like the initial, because there's follow up series, but the Incal, I think there's just four. Bond Disney's of that. So they're all like about 100 pages. So that would make sense. So yeah, I've seen those, but I've only seen them on like a tablet screen. So, and the art on those is like, you know, that's one of the ones where I was constantly like, you know, making the images huge so I could just get into the detail of it. Cause it's kind of mind blowing. Not even kind of, it's mind blowing.
Now, also on that page, 305, is a title published by It's Alive, and this is Aztec Ace, The Complete Collection. I'm not familiar with this, but I would like to be, and this is written by Doug Munch with art by Dan Day and then others. I'm not familiar with Aztec Ace. Are you?
I've read some of it.
Because this originally came out in the 80s, apparently.
Yeah, this is, I think, I want to say this is one of the Eclipse. Like, it was an Eclipse magazine, and then Eclipse put it out as a title. And this is one of those books that I looked at it. I was in my used bookstore, and they have magazines and things, and I found an issue of Eclipse, so I bought it. So I was like, why not? You know, even though I think I have it, but it was like a dollar. So I went and looked at what the excerpt was, and it's gorgeous, but the story was, I mean, I don't think it aged well, but it's phenomenal for what it is. I mean, it's one of those, you know, at least the 80s black and white comics, like part of the, you know, the move to more independent work from a lot of the creators that had been, you know, formerly beholden to the big two. So for that, it's notable. And I like it. I think it's gorgeous to look at. The story is not as awesome. You know, I think a lot of the way that the dialogue gets delivered is just clunky. That's all. But okay. I think it's a beautiful book though.
Okay. I don't have anything after that until page 219. What about you?
What do I have? 219?
Yeah.
319.
Oh,
I don't
sorry,
have
319. I'm sorry.
That's okay. I was like, I don't have anything until 328. So
okay, now on 319, and this is listed under Little Brown Book for younger readers or young readers. This is arguably an adaptation, and I have kind of a broad definition of what an adaptation is. This is Meg, Joe, Beth, and Amy. A modern retelling of Little Women. So this is written by Ray Tessiero with art by Bray Indigo. So this year marks the 150th anniversary of Louisa May Alcott's Little Women. So I guess in celebration of this, they're releasing both a soft cover and hardcover edition of Meg, Jo, Beth, and Amy, modern retelling of Little Women. So I'd be curious to see how they handle Little Women. Little Women is something that I used to teach. When I would teach a book on, let's say, pre-Civil War, or if you want to call antebellum American literature. And yeah, I mean, I'm not the biggest fan of sentimental narrative, but it is a classic, and there's a lot to it. So I'm wondering what this graphic novel modern retelling is going to be about.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely popped on my radar, and then like you, I'm not the biggest sentimental literature fan. So I went, okay, no. But definitely intriguing. I mean, I would flip this and see what it was about.
And you say you next go to page what now?
I went to page 328.
Okay. Yeah. And there are a few things that I wanted to mention right before that. So, and I'll mention them briefly because this is, as you would expect, turning out to be an extra long episode, of course. It's previews.
It's more bang for your buck.
That's right. And we're kind of making up for not doing a November preview show.
That's right.
You could argue that. On 320, under NBM, there is volume 3 of The Story of Lee by Sean Michael Wilson with art by Pierrell. I haven't seen, I don't remember seeing solicited in earlier volumes, The Story of Lee, volumes 1 and volume 2. In earlier previews, and maybe I'm just forgetting, but I mean, it seems like an interesting series. Had you heard of The Story of Lee?
I had not.
Okay. Okay. So there's that. And then on the next page, there's something that I'm much more excited about. Actually, several things, under New York Review Comics, which if listeners of our Thanksgiving show will recall, this publisher was one of the things I have been thankful for this past year, New York Review Comics. They have another book coming out by Gebe. I guess that's how you pronounce the name, G-E-B-E. And this is Letters to Survivors, a haunting and darkly funny post-apocalyptic graphic novel that follows an unusual postal worker on his very bizarre mail route. In the blasted ruins of what was once a picture-perfect suburb, nothing stirs except the postman. It seems really interesting. New York Review Comics does great work, not only in terms of the stories that they put out, but also the presentation, the packaging. So I'm sure that this is something that, because it originally came out in France, something that maybe Pascal and I can discuss on a future episode.
No, it looks cool. It was one of those books that I looked at, and then I don't know why I didn't note it. I should have noted it. It would have been on the honorable mentions of noting.
And then also on that page, under No Brow, are two books that seem really interesting. The first one is Darwin, An Exceptional Voyage by Fabien Galieu and Jeremy Royer. So this looks at, I guess, the life of Darwin when he was aboard the Beagle. So that's interesting. But then there is another work that is a work of fiction called Through a Life by Tom Hagemat. And this is a silent graphic novel. It says it's the saga of a boy who grows up to be an astronaut just like he always wanted, until a fatal space shuttle crash unbends his life and he begins to find solace in beauty here on Earth. I really do like No Brow and the kind of things that they come out with. And these two solicits are no exception.
Yeah, their books have consistently been gorgeous. I mean, that's the only word I can really think of to describe them. That I've really been impressed with what they put out here. So those are both. I had not, for some reason, I did not even register those, but those both look awesome.
Well, things it's like easy I would to, buy. Yeah, it's easy to overlook things in the previews catalog since there's so much.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I get overwhelmed.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's one of the great things about doing these preview shows is, you know, I may catch something that you overlook, and I know definitely vice versa, because there have been past shows where you've mentioned something that I just didn't see. Now, on the next page, 322, and this is the only thing I have in the Oni section. This seems interesting. A quick and easy guide to queer and trans identity. And this is by Maddie G and J.R. Zuckerberg. You know, they've been doing a lot of books that deal with gender identity and even sexuality. Not too long ago, and in fact, they're re-soliciting this, A Quick and Easy Guide to They-Them Pronouns. Now we have A Quick and Easy Guide to Queer and Trans Identity. So, yeah, Oni has been doing quite a bit. Now, is this part of their Limerick? Is it Limerick? I guess the imprint that deals with sex. I don't know if this is part of that imprint.
I think it is.
Okay, because I don't see it on the two pages that we have here.
It would make sense that it was.
It would. And that's the only thing I have in Oni. After that, I go to page 328.
Yeah, what do I have? 320. No, I do too. 328. Right. It might be the same thing.
I'm sure it is, because there's only one thing listed on that page.
Hey, it's that one thing. I'll let you say it, because
pronounce it better. I've been talking.
All right. How about it's Pilou? Would you say it that way? Pilou?
Pilou, yeah.
Pilou of the Woods by May K. Nguyen. And it's it looks like it's for younger readers, and it says at the beginning that it's for fans of the Hilda series and the Real Friends and Real Friends, which I really liked Real Friends. But this is a heartwarming – Pilou of the Woods is a heartwarming story about the complex emotions, friendships, and finding your way home from this debut author, A.K. Nguyen. And so, you know, it goes on to say Willow loves the woods near her house. They're calm and quiet, so different from her own turbulent emotions, which she keeps locked away. When her emotions get the better of her one day, she decides to run away into the woods. There she meets Pilou, a lost tree spirit who can't find her way back home, which turns out to be a magnolia grove Willow's mom used to take her to. Willow offers to help Pilou, and the two quickly become friends. And this to me just sounds like a great kind of, I mean, it's for younger readers, but it just sounds, I don't know, I'm intrigued by the premise. There's a lot of, I don't know, I've read a lot of books, you know, ostensibly aimed for younger people, like Real Friends. I really enjoy. I think Shannon Hale wrote it, and it's a story about how her, you know, basically her friendships in fifth grade, and how she figured out who was her friends and who weren't her friends. And it was a, you know, like a really fascinating book that, you know, I'm not a young girl in fifth grade, but there was a lot that, you know, made me remember my own childhood and my own friendships. And Hilda, have you read any of Hilda, or have you read any of those?
No, I haven't.
Hilda's a series from Nobrow. Mm-hmm.
And I know that Gwen and Paul have discussed mm-hmm. at least one volume of Hilda in the past.
Oh yeah. I think it's now a series I think Amazon has put it out as an animated series.
Oh wow.
And it's got some legs. I want to say there's about 10 books in the series. And they're not, Nobow puts them out, but it's the children's picture book imprint that's associated with them.
Oh yeah. What do they call that? Flying Penguin? No, not Flying Penguin. Flying Eye. I can't remember, but
it's something like that.
Yeah. It's Flying's in the.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's the series, but those are just some great books. Mm-hmm. Like they're just inventive and imaginative, and you know, the kids are not like kids. They're not like, you know, they're not talked down to. They're treated like people.
Right.
And so to me, if this is a book like that, I'm very much on board for this book.
Yeah. And according to the solicit, there's bonus content. Mm-hmm. The edition includes blank journal pages in the back to encourage readers to keep their own notes about nature and their feelings. Mm-hmm. You know, yet another book that Crystal and Gwen could discuss. I'm going to have to tell Gwen to make sure she listens to this episode of the podcast, because we're giving them diamonds here.
That's right. She could be purposefully avoiding it. Yeah. No.
Yeah. Oh, and also, I correct myself. You know, earlier when I was highlighting the Quick and Easy Guide to Queer and Trans Identity, I said that's the only book in Oni that I wanted to mention. Actually, this is an Oni book. I'd forgotten.
Oh, well, there you go. Yeah, and there's a pretty good excerpt in this for a few pages, too. And these pages look gorgeous. And this just looks like it's a great narrative hook on top of everything else that's going on there. Because, you know, it's got like kids being cruel to her and or Will. He's a boy. But still, you know, we have a rule that we don't play with wusses. That's a horrible thing to say to a child.
That's right. So where do you go after that?
After that, I go a long way before. No, I don't. I go to page 339.
Okay. Yeah. Before that, I have a couple of things. Mm-hmm. On 334, this is under Pegasus, the publisher.
Uh-huh.
The Bebop Barbarians. This is written by Gary Phillips with art by Dale W. Barry. It says, in the turbulent era of the late 1950s, Manhattan with jazz, the burgeoning civil rights movement, and the Red Scare as the volatile ingredients, three groundbreaking black cartoonists defy convention and pay the price. And then it goes on from there. And the solicit, I think, is really interesting. But another thing that caught my attention is, you know, when I went back to Frisco about a week and a half ago, I saw that Pegasus had sent to that old address, not to my Charlotte address, not really a galley of the Bebop Barbarians, because it wasn't 112 pages,
mm-hmm.
as this apparently is, but I guess a portion of it in galley form. So gotcha. It wasn't in color, but it did get my attention, you know, not only the title, but also the subject matter. Mm-hmm. So I think that's why I really noticed that in this issue, the December catalog.
Gotcha.
Preview. So, yeah, so this is something that seems really interesting. And then a few pages later, on 337, and this is under the publisher's Robots and Monkeys, is the graphic novel Eric by mm-hmm. Tom Manning. And the reason I mention this is that you remember earlier this year, and I think maybe even the tail end of 2017, maybe,
mm-hmm.
I had been doing for a while a weekly Kickstarter series.
Right.
Short episodes. The reason I stopped doing that was just a matter of time, right? I mean, mm-hmm. we were just putting out so many episodes of the Comics Alternative with our weekly series, the interviews and the monthly series and all of that, that it just became a little too much. And so mm-hmm. I kind of let the Saturday Kickstarter shows die a slow, quiet death.
Aw.
Yeah, I enjoyed doing those. And if I had world enough in time, then I would pick that up again. Who knows? Maybe in the future. But the last one I did was with Tom Manning when he was kickstarting Eric.
Oh, okay.
And I think I remember him telling me either on the show or maybe in an email that he was going to have this come out and solicited in previews, you know, after he got the Kickstarter done. And here we have it.
Was this the book that he had an original, he had a couple original songs with it?
Yes.
Am I making that? Okay. I remember that one. Okay.
Yeah. Because the titular character is an older musician and he had people do music that was specific to this graphic novel. So yeah, definitely worth checking out Tom Manning's Eric.
Yeah, that was really cool. I remember I was a fan of the Kickstarter show, so I think I listened to all of them.
Now I feel bad that I stopped it.
Well, no. I mean, I know it went, but you know, time. Yeah. It's it just keeps on slipping into the future. I don't know where that just came from.
I kind of knew in the back of my head that you would do that.
But it was coming.
Yeah. But then after that, I go where you go, and I'm sure it's the same thing. Silver Sprocket?
Yes.
Yeah.
Silver Sprocket.
Yeah. On pages 339 and 340, we have Silver Sprocket solicits, and they're three.
Yes. Which is impressive, too. Just the number. But one of the books we actually talked about already, Egg Cream Number One. By Liz Suburbia. And what I've learned is that if there's a comic by Liz Suburbia, you should just buy it.
Right.
And this is a follow-up to the Sacred Heart, the graphic novel that Fantagraphics put out. And we talked a lot about it in that episode. But these are just excellent comics. It's not just that. There's also a Dream Diary. And there's another little strip or two. But I loved that book, and I'm glad to see it solicited and available for purchase, because that what we looked at was really what the Kickstarter version and not the official publication version. So I'm glad that, you know, it's out there and in the world now for people to pick up on.
Yeah. And in fact, that was the very first episode that you were on, and that was back in what, September, mid-September.
Oh, those were the days.
Oh yeah. You know, the thing about that though, is that the book that we looked at, the digital version of Suburbia's Egg Cream Number One, came out through Zap Books' Kickstarter campaign.
That's right.
But this is a Silver Sprocket book.
Right. It seems to be about as long, though. It's 72 pages, so I'm imagining there's not too much content that's different. But I like that I can get a hard copy of it.
Yeah. The other two books in the Silver Sprocket section seem interesting as well. Abby Jane, Emotional Data.
Yep.
Seems really interesting. Art as well as the solicit. And then there is on 340, the first volume of Jen Woodall's Magical Breakdown. A hyper-violent street harassment revenge fantasy in the style of Sailor Moon, which I think Shay and I are going to discuss Silver Moon on an upcoming manga show. About an average schoolgirl who transforms into a foul mouth and rage-filled magical girl. So, I mean, these are all interesting. I am more and more impressed with Silver Sprocket, and just recently, I guess the past 2 or 3 months, I've been talking with Avi at Silver Sprocket about doing Silver Sprocket Publisher Spotlight. And as you know, because I've been looping you into these emails.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
What we've been talking about, Avi and I have discussed, is possibly maybe in January or early February, doing a Publisher Spotlight on Silver Sprocket, basically looking at all of their 2018 releases, right? So it'll be like 2018 with Silver Sprocket in review.
Yeah, no, that when I interviewed Liz Prince, that was one of her books came through this year too. The Be Your Own Backing Band.
That's right. And I remember her making a comment that you know, the people at, like Avi and others at Silver Sprocket are kind of punk, and you go to various cons and they'll do kind of strange things like cut your hair. If you win a prize or something.
That is the prize, that you get your hair cut.
Yeah. So they had like a spinning wheel. And if you, you know, get, I don't know, whatever it is that you're supposed to get and you win something, that something is a haircut.
You got to commit.
Yeah. I couldn't do that.
No, well,
unless they trim my Van Dyke,
they could draw a little Charlie Brown squiggle on you.
Yeah, I guess they could. That'd be funky.
Yeah.
Now, I have two more things in the regular section before we get to manga, and actually not that much in manga.
Okay. I have something on 341.
What's that?
It's from Squarefish, and I don't know if this is actually a comic book or not, but it's a history of video games.
It says reference book.
Oh, so it's a video. This is a reference. This is a book about, yeah, video games. Mm-hmm. But it's a history of video games, which is interesting to me. But it's called Game On, but yeah, that's not a comic. So, but I would check that out because I'm into histories of comic of video games too.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd like to check that out as well. I have something on 341, but this is under Starburns Industries Press. Mm-hmm. This seemed interesting. Trent. This is written by Dino, a fellow Greek, I guess. Stamatopoulos. Is that how you pronounce it?
Stamatopoulos, yeah. The accent's always on the third syllable from the end.
Okay. Stamatopoulos.
Yep.
Okay. And then Leah Ticcioni.
Yeah, I would go with that.
Yeah. It says, Trent is a light tragedy with music about the dangers of hope and the delusions of love. When Bob and Doris lose their baby boy, Trent, to a foolish mistake, they fall back on the old optimism of the classic musical. Mm-hmm. And apparently there's a soundtrack to this book, which actually is the reason that I wanted to mention this, because, you know, there are every now and again, we've been seeing books that do this, mm-hmm, that have soundtracks to them where you can, let's say, get a code to download the music to listen as a backdrop to certain parts of the book. And apparently this is one of them.
Yeah, that's a neat thing, that just like that Eric book you just talked about. That's mm-hmm. I'm always fascinated when that happens and how well they seem to mesh together, the music and the comics, just in general, the people that kind of the ones I've seen or listened to or experienced. I'll put it that way.
Yeah.
But yeah. And Stamatopoulos is he's on Community, or was he a writer on Community? He was actor. I know he's a comedian. I've heard his name. So I'd be interested in checking that out just on that merit too.
Yeah. Do you have anything else in the regular?
I don't. I have two manga, and they're both collections.
Okay. The last thing that I have before we get to the manga section is mm-hmm. on page 363, and there's a somewhat of a personal history to the reason why I'm mentioning this. Mm-hmm. This is going to be published by William Morrow, and this is Good Omens, by mm-hmm. written by Neil Gaiman and Terry Pratchett with various artists. And it says it's a television tie-in edition. I didn't know they were doing a TV version series of Good Omens. Mm-hmm. And I'm assuming that this is going to be a graphic novel. You can't tell from the cover because it's kind of a simple, no image cover that says cover to be revealed.
Right.
And I do hope that this is a graphic novel or comics version or adaptation of Good Omens. For this reason, years ago when I graduated from undergraduate school and started a liberal studies grad program at UNC Greensboro, actually even before that, I thought, you know, hey, I want to do book reviews. And so I contacted a number of newspapers in the Triad region and even reached out to other newspapers. And with mm-hmm. two or three papers, I was able to do, you know, reviews here or there. I don't know if this is the first, but it was one of the first books I ever reviewed for a newspaper was Good Omens.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have a fondness for this title. It's been years since I've read it, but it was one of the very first book reviews that I ever wrote, you know, for something other than just a very limited audience, right? So this mm-hmm. appeared, I can't remember if it was in the Winston-Salem newspaper or there was some paper that I can't remember the title of the paper at St. Petersburg, Florida, that I reviewed mm-hmm. for as well. But and then the Greensboro News and Record, I think I did one or two reviews for. So, yeah, this is something that I would be interested in. Although it's in, you know, if this is a Gaiman adaptation, it's mm-hmm. interesting that William Morrow is publishing that because Dark Horse has been publishing his other comics adaptation of his writing. But because this is a TV tie-in, I guess William Morrow is more of a trade publisher. It may make more sense.
I think this book has been out of print as part of it. Or at least it wasn't for a while. I remember because They have copies in my local books, like the used bookstore, and they're pricier than you would think a book would be. That was like a novel. And I think there was some issue with the, I don't know about the publisher or editions or something, but I think this is a book that hasn't been out in a while. And now that it's being put on TV, maybe this is a novel version of it, but I'm not sure. I just know that I bought a copy of it in the last couple of years, and it was more than I thought I would pay for it. But it turns out it wasn't in print at the time. So this could be it coming back into, you know, mass paperback form. It's possible. But I do want to add something, because I lingered on this page, and the comic right next to it is a comic that I think I own, but not this version. The Tales of the Music Makers from Z2 Comics.
Okay.
And it's written by, well, it's not written by, some of the comics are biographies of musicians. And apparently the book comes with a soundtrack, so you can get songs by them. And like people like Taj Mahal and Robert Finley. I've read this before though, because some of them were written by Harvey Pekar. And Gary Dumm drew it, and Gary Dumm was one of the, you know, one of the more prominent collaborators on American Splendor. So I've read a bunch of these comics. They're one or two page biographies about musicians. Some you may have heard of, some you may not have heard of, but they're really interesting. And this book is well worth checking out, I think. Plus, if you get music on it to boot, I think that's good. And it says that the proceeds from this book go to the creators of the Music Maker Relief Foundation, whose mission it is to take care of old musicians in need. So not only do you get good comics, you help a good cause. So I think this is a great book.
Cool.
That I didn't even notice until now.
There you go. See? You know, it's easy to overlook things in the previous catalog, and every now and again, you just glance and say, oops, something I should have looked at earlier.
I know. See, that cover was just very blue, and didn't draw me into what I should have been.
Okay, so after, I guess, the regular preview section proper, we go to manga, because now, you know, previews is grouping all the manga together, you know,
which, right.
And, you know, strengths and weaknesses to that. But, you know, before we get to any of the solicit, I want to mention this is on page, 371. I like what Previews has been doing in terms of its Mangapedia.
Right.
You know, where it goes over very briefly certain terms in manga that, you know, non-manga readers may not be familiar with. I find it interesting that this month it's Ero manga and hentai.
Yeah.
You know, very sexual manga. You know, a lot of people think who may not be familiar with manga, who may not read manga, may have a stereotypical view that most of manga is highly sexualized.
Right.
Most of it isn't. A lot of it is, though. And in fact, there have been times that Shay and I have even looked at books where you will have female characters who are not only scantily clad, but who have these abnormally, unnaturally oversized breasts that are bigger than their heads. You know, there's a lot of manga that's like that. You know, there's also manga where there is, let's say, maybe not sexualized in you know, like overly large breasts, but deal with actual sex, where you do see people you know, getting it on, and not just men and women, but also women with women and men with men,
and all kinds of other things.
Yeah. You know, so, you know, the sexualized is a part of manga history, and whether you like it or not, I mean, I'm glad that in this month's Mangapedia, they've chosen to at least briefly define and go over some of these terms.
Yeah. I remember, what's the book? Sam Zabel and the Magic Pen. Did you read that?
Yeah.
The Dylan Horrocks. That was one of the, yeah, like the kind of take on it was that, you know, about hentai and about all these things and, you know, rescuing, well, not rescuing, but that one, like reclaiming that one character, like reclaims her life from that kind of comic.
Right.
Where,
and of course, there are tentacles involved.
Yes. There's always, well, not always, but a lot of times there's tentacles.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you say you have a couple of things in the manga section. I do as well. I have two.
I do. I have there one's on 381 and one's on 389.
Okay, so 381.
Mm-hmm.
Let me get there.
This is a collection of DramaCon, which I don't know if you've ever read anything by Svetlana. I think it's Chimakova. She's written a bunch of right now she's got a version of comics for YA readers called it's a middle school. I forget the name of it, but they all have names like Brave and each volume in those books. Those are kind of prominent right now in kind of the YA market. And those are each book features a different student in the school. So it's like they kind of pop up in each other's stories. So it's kind of interesting take on, you know, how they view each other and how they kind of go through life. But this is, I think, one of her first books. And, you know, she was one of those. It was notable because she wasn't like a traditional Japanese artist. She's not Japanese. So that she was kind of brought into it. From what I remember, it was kind of like it was notable because she wasn't a Japanese manga artist, but she was doing a manga. And this is kind of a romance story, which I generally don't like. But I think originally this was three books about, this kind of up and coming writer who goes to an anime convention and she's trying to kind of figure out her way in the world and, you know, establish a foothold in the building. She's kind of like at the amateur table and she starts meeting people and trying to make friends. And, there's this intriguing guy who wears costumes and, they kind of flirt and she's got a boyfriend though. So it's complicated. And then over time, relationships develop and things like that. It sounds on face value to me, it would be a book I don't think I would be into, but the way she does characters and relationships are a lot more nuanced than I would expect in like a teen manga, or maybe I'm just not, doing teen manga justice. But I really liked these books when I read them, and they were some of the first manga titles that I personally got into, outside of, traditional, Lone Wolf and Cub and kind of like the classics that I looked at. So this is a really good bunch of books that, maybe for more of a YA audience, but I still think, even as an adult, I really got a lot out of them.
Now, after that, you say you go to 389.
I do.
Because I do as well.
Go ahead. What do you got?
No, now you said you were looking at a collection. Actually, I'm looking at the book that I guess is the new title of the new translation, Urushi Yatsura.
And yeah.
Oh, so that's what you were going to highlight?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and this is by Rumiko Takahashi. And I do like Rumiko Takahashi's work. I've read a little of Ranma 1/2, and I have read quite a number of volumes of her series, Maison Ikkoku, which I really enjoy.
Yeah.
And so this is yet another title from her, and I really do want Shay and I to discuss this on an upcoming manga show.
Yeah, this
will be coming out in February.
I don't know if you remember but during the Thanksgiving show, I said I was thankful for one of the series. I probably just butchered it, mispronouncing it, but this is the series because this was originally published by, I want to say, First Comics, maybe.
Oh, really?
Like in collaboration with Viz in the 80s, but it was published as Lum, which is the name of the tiger bikini character on the cover.
Oh, okay.
So she's an invader from another planet. And she comes to Earth and she meets Arturo Moribushi, who is literally the most unlucky person on Earth. Like he has like bad luck demons infesting every aspect of his life. And she falls in love with him for some reason. And which might be a curse, partly because she's the daughter of the leader of this invasion force that is bent on taking over the Earth. And it falls on his shoulders to defend the Earth and prevent the invasion. And he's a hapless schmo. That's the only way I can put it. So, it's really funny. And I really enjoyed this series. It's one of the first. If it's not the first manga series I ever read, it's one of the first. And I really like that it's coming back into print because you know what happened in the 80s with First Comics. Like, it was there and then it kind of fell off. This has never been collected in its entirety. There's lots of different little books you can get here and a book here and a collection there, but you can't get it all. So until now, which that makes me, it brought me joy.
Well, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So I have one more thing in previews in the manga section, and this is on page 398. And this is published by Denpa. And in fact, I've been noticing more and more titles from Denpa. And until a few months ago, I didn't even know that Denpa existed. I was just completely out of it. But I don't even remember Denpa being listed in previews until, let's say, earlier this year. And they seem to be doing some really interesting titles. They have two titles solicited this month, but the one that really caught my attention is written and illustrated by Asumiko Nakamura, and this is Maiden Railways. And it says, this book is your ticket to seven romances from confessions in Eruda to proposals in Inoshima and all points in between. Beloved Yoshi, boy's love, mangaka, Asumiko Nakamura returns to the English market with a unique collection of romance shorts, each set around the Kanagawa railway system. And the thing that got my attention about this, it's a series of stories, but they seem to be interconnected. And I am a sucker for at least what's called in fiction, short story cycles, and what I call in comics, graphic cycles. This seems to be a graphic cycle to me from the way that they describe it. Because if it is seven different stories, each of which deals with romance in one form or another, but they're all interconnected by being on a train or this railway system, then they have to be interconnected. So yet another book that I would like to discuss on the manga show.
Cool.
So that's it. You don't have anything else in previews.
I think we put a little bow on it.
Wow. Well, we've been going not quite three hours now. Can you believe it?
Wow. I thought it was two. Well, rock on.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I've come to expect and just accept the fact that the preview shows are going to be kind of longer. And by the way, I appreciate the fact that, you know, you're not bothered by this. I know when Kanka used to be the co-host, he was rather meticulous about trying to keep it at about an hour and a half. And so there were times that we rushed through some of the solicits and I finished the recording feeling a little dissatisfied. Now I leave the recordings feeling tired.
Yeah. I was going to say, with low blood sugar, I'm bringing snacks next time.
Yeah. But yeah, there you go. Our look at the December previews catalog. It's a really long episode, but then again, our preview shows have been getting longer, especially since Sturge has stepped up as the new co-host.
Put it on me.
So he's an enabler.
That's it.
Yeah. But yeah, a lot of good stuff. And I think it's worth discussing it for this long. And you can bet your bottom dollar. I don't even know what a bottom dollar is. That every single thing that we mentioned on this December preview show can be found at significant discounts at the website of our sponsor, Discount Comic Book Service. Remember, go to dcbservice.com, and there you will find a whole slew of discounts on these titles and many, many others. Every single month, you can't beat their prices. That's discountcomicbookservice.com.
That's right. You can't beat them with a stick.
That's right. There you go. Bottom dollar, beat him with a stick.
See? We're going to make a song out of this.
Yeah. And after you do get your comics there, get in touch with us and let us know what you're going to be reading. If you go to our website, comicsalternative.com, you'll find that you can leave us a voice message online via SpeakPipe. Or you can call us the old-fashioned way. Pick up that phone and dial 415-3-COMICS. That's 415-326-6427.
Or you can email us at twoguys@comicsalternative.com. Or if you want to just email me, you can email Sturge at comicsalternative.com.
or me at Derek@comicsalternative.com. We're all over social media as well, so contact us that way. We have accounts on Twitter, Facebook, Tumblr, Instagram, Google+, Goodreads, Pinterest, YouTube, Slack, and Discord. You can subscribe to the podcast through Apple Podcasts. You can stream us on Stitcher. You can also find us on Spotify, on Google Podcasts, on TuneIn, and on iHeartRadio. But you can find every single one of our podcast episodes, as well as the reviews and comics-related commentary that we post on our blog, simply by going to our website, comicsalternative.com.
Sounds great to me.
Yeah, so we do like to hear from you, and we will be back next week with a regular review show.
Slightly shorter.
yeah, slightly shorter. Until then, I'm Derek.
And I'm Sturge.
Take care.
Peace.
What happened?